It's different, I said.
But not in the way you think. Why should drinking blood be so strange to you? You've seen Moroi do it. You've let Moroi do it.
I flinched, not really wanting to dwell on how I used to let Lyssa drink for me while we lived among humans. I certainly didn't want to think about the rush of endorphins that had come with that and how I'd nearly become an addict. They don't kill.
They're missing out. It's incredible.
He breathed. He closed his eyes for a moment, then opened them.
To drink the blood of another. To watch the life fade from them and feel it pour into you. It's the greatest experience in the world.
Listening to him talk about killing others increased my nausea. It's sick and wrong. It happened so fast that I didn't have any time to react. Dimitri leapt out and grabbed me, pulling me to him and spreading me out on the couch. With his arm still wrapped around me, he positioned himself so that he was half beside me and half on top. I was too stunned to move.
No, it's not. And that's where you have to trust me. You'd love it. I want to be with you, Rose. Really be with you. We're free of the rules that others put on us. We can be together now. The strongest of the strong. Taking everything we want. We can eventually be as strong as Galena. We could have a place just like this. All our own.
While his bare skin was still cold, the press of the rest of his body against mine was warm. The red in his eyes practically gleamed while this close, and as he spoke, I saw the fangs in his mouth. I was used to seeing fangs on Moroi, but on him, it was sickening. I briefly toyed with the idea of trying to break free but promptly dismissed it. If Dimitri wanted to hold me down, I would stay down. I don't want any of this, I said.
Don't you want me?
He asked with a wicked smile.
You wanted me once.
No, I said, knowing I lied.
What do you want, then? To go back to the academy? To serve Moroi, who will throw you into danger without a second thought? If you wanted that kind of life, why did you come here?
I came to free you.
I am free, he responded. And if you'd really intended to kill me, you would have.
He shifted slightly, resting his face close to my neck.
You couldn't.
I messed up. It won't happen again.
Suppose that were true. Suppose you were able to kill me now. Suppose you were even able to escape. What then? Will you go back home? Will you return to Lyssa and let her continue bleeding spirits' darkness into you?
I don't know, I replied stiffly. And it was the truth. My plans had never gone past finding him.
It will consume you, you know, as long as she continues to use her magic. No matter how far away you go, you'll always feel the side effects. At least as long as she's alive.
I stiffened in his arms and moved my face away. What's that mean? Are you going to join Nathan and hunt her down?
What happens to her is no concern of mine, he said. If you were awakened, Lyssa would no longer be a threat to you. You'd be free. The bond would break.
And what would happen to her? She'd be left alone.
Like I said, that's no concern of mine. Being with you is.
Yeah? Well, I don't want to be with you. He turned my face toward him so that we were looking at each other again. Once more, I had that weird feeling of being with Dimitri and not with Dimitri. Love and fear. He narrowed his eyes.
I don't believe you.
Believe what you want. I don't want you anymore. His lips quirked into one of those scary, smirking smiles.
You're lying. I can tell. I've always been able to.
It's the truth. I wanted you before. I don't want you now. If I kept saying it, it would be true. He moved closer to me, and I froze. If I shifted even half an inch, our lips would touch.
My exterior. My power. Yes, that's different. Better. But otherwise, I'm the same, Rosa. My essence hasn't changed. The connection between us hasn't changed. You just can't see it yet.
Everything's changed. With his lips so close, all I kept thinking about was that brief, passionate kiss he'd given me the last time he was here. No. 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 Don't think about that.
If I'm so different, then why don't I force you into an awakening? Why am I giving you the choice?
A snappy retort was on my lips, but then it died. That was an excellent question. Why was he giving me the choice? Strigoi didn't give their victims choices. They killed mercilessly and took what they wanted. If Dimitri truly wanted me to join him, then he should have turned me as soon as he had me. More than a day had passed, and he'd showered me with luxury. Why? If he turned me, I had no doubt that I'd become as twisted as him. It would make everything a lot simpler. He continued when I remained silent.
And if I'm so different, then why did you kiss me back earlier?
I still didn't know what to say, and it made his smile grow.
No answer. You know I'm right.
His lips suddenly found mine again. I made a small sound of protest and tried vainly to escape his embrace. He was too strong, and after a moment, I didn't want to escape. That same sensation as before flooded me. His lips were cold, but the kiss burned between us. Fire and ice. And he was right. I did kiss him back. Desperately, that rational part of me screamed that this was wrong. Last time, he'd broken the kiss before too much could happen. Not this time. And as we continued kissing now, that rational voice in me grew smaller and smaller. The part of me that would always love Dimitri took over, exulting in the way his body felt against mine. The way he wound my hair around one of his hands, letting the fingers get tangled up. His other hand slid up the back of my shirt, cold against my warm skin. I pushed myself closer to him and felt the pressure of the kiss increase as his own desire picked up. Then, in the midst of it all, my tongue lightly brushed against the sharp point of one of his fangs. It was like a bucket of cold water tossed upon me. With as much strength as I could muster, I jerked my head away, pulling out of the kiss. I could only guess that his guard had been momentarily down, allowing me that small escape. My breathing was heavy, my whole body still wanting him. My mind, however, was the part of me in control, for now at least. God, what had I been doing? It's not the Dimitri you knew. It's not him. I'd been kissing a monster, but my body wasn't so sure. No, I murmured, surprised by how pathetic and pleading I sounded. No, we can't do this.
Are you sure?
He asked. His hand was still in my hair, and he forcibly turned my head so that I was face to face with him again.
You didn't seem to mind. Everything can be just like it was before. Like it was in the cabin. You certainly wanted it then.
The cabin. No, I repeated. I don't want that. He pressed his lips against my cheek, and then made a surprisingly gentle trail of kisses down to my neck. Again, I felt my body's yearning for him, and I hated myself for the weakness.
What about this?
He asked, his voice barely a whisper.
Do you want this? What?
I felt it, the sharp bite of teeth into my skin as he closed his mouth down on my neck. For half an instant, it was agonizing, painful, and horrible. And then, just like that, the pain disappeared. A rush of bliss and joy poured through me. It was so sweet. I had never felt so wonderful in my life. It reminded me a little of how it had been when Lyssa drank from me. That had been amazing. But this was 10 times better. 100 times better. The rush from a Strigoi bite was greater than that of a Moroi's. It was like being in love for the first time, filled with that all-consuming joyous feeling. When he pulled away, it felt like all the happiness and wonder in the world had vanished. He ran a hand over his mouth, and I stared at him wide-eyed. My initial instinct was to ask why he'd stopped, but then, slowly, I reached inside myself to fight past the blissful daze that his bite had sent me into.
Why? What?
My words slurred a little.
You said it would be my choice.
It still is,
he said. His own eyes were wide, his breathing heavy too. He'd been just as affected as me.
I'm not doing this to awaken you, Rosa. A bite like this won't turn you. This, well, this is just for fun.
Then, his mouth moved back to my neck to drink again, and I lost track of the world. Chapter 20. The days after that were like a dream. In fact, I honestly can't say how many days even passed. Maybe it was one. Maybe it was 100. I lost track of day and night, too. My time was divided into Dimitri or not Dimitri. He was my world. When he wasn't there, the moments were agony. I'd pass them as best I could, but they seemed to drag on forever. The TV was my best friend during those times. I'd lie on the couch for hours, only half following what was going on. In keeping with the rest of the suite's luxury, I had access to satellite television, which meant we were actually pulling in some American programming. Half the time, though, I wasn't sure that it really made a difference to me if the language was Russian or English. Ina continued her periodic checks on me. She brought me my meals and did my laundry. I was wearing the dresses now, and waited around in that silent way of hers to see if I needed anything else. I never did. At least not from her. I only needed Dimitri. Each time she left, some distant part of me remembered I was supposed to do something. Follower, that was it. I'd had some plan to check out the exit and use her as a way to escape, right? Now that plan no longer held the appeal. Seemed like a lot of work. And then, finally, Dimitri would visit, and the monotony would be broken. We'd lie together on my bed, wrapped in each other's arms. We never had sex, but we'd kiss and touch and lose ourselves in the wonder of each other's bodies, sometimes with very little clothing. After a while, I found it hard to believe I'd once been afraid of his new appearance. Sure, the eyes were a bit shocking, but he was still gorgeous, still unbelievably sexy. And after we'd talked and made out for a while, for hours sometimes, I'd let him bite me. Then I'd get that rush, that wonderful, exquisite flood of chemicals that lifted me from all my problems. Whatever doubts I'd had about God's existence vanished in those moments because surely, surely I was touching God when I lost myself in that bite. This was heaven.
"Let me see your neck," he said one day.
We were lying together as usual. I was on my side and he was snuggled up against my back, one arm draped around my waist. I rolled over and brushed my hair away from where it had fallen over my neck and cleavage. The dress I wore today was a navy halter sundress, made of some light, clingy material. "All ready?" I asked. He usually didn't bite me until the end of his visits. While part of me longed for that and waited in anticipation to feel that high again, I did kind of enjoy these moments beforehand. It was when the endorphins in my system were at their lowest, so I was able to manage some sort of conversation. We would talk about fights we'd been in, or the life he imagined for us when I was Strigoi. Nothing too sentimental, but nice nonetheless. I braced myself for the bite now, arching up in anticipation. To my surprise, he didn't lean down and sink his teeth into me. He reached into his pocket and produced a necklace. It was either white gold or platinum, I didn't have the skill to tell which, and had three dark blue sapphires the size of quarters. He'd brought me a lot of jewelry this week, and I swore each piece was more beautiful than the last. I stared in amazement at its beauty, at the way the blue stones glittered in the light. He placed the necklace against my skin and fastened it behind my neck. Running his fingers along the necklace's edges, he nodded in approval.
Beautiful.
His fingers drifted to one of the dress's straps. He slid his hand underneath it, sending a thrill through my skin.
It matches.
I smiled. In the old days, Dimitri had almost never gotten me gifts. He hadn't had the means, and I hadn't wanted them anyway. Now, I was continually dazzled by the presence he seemed to have at each visit. "Where'd you get it?" I asked. The metal was cooled against my flushed skin, but nowhere near as cold as his fingers. He smiled slyly.
"I have my sources."
That chastising voice in my head, that sometimes managed to penetrate through the haze I lived in, noted that I was involved with some sort of vampire gangster. Its warnings were immediately squashed and sank back down into my dreamy cloud of existence. How could I be upset when the necklace was so beautiful? Something suddenly struck me as funny. "You're just like Abe."
"Who?"
"This guy I met, Abe Mazur. He's some kind of mob boss. He kept following me." Dimitri stiffened.
"Abe Mazur was following you?"
I didn't like the dark look that had suddenly fallen over his features.
"Yeah,
so?"
"Why? What did he want with you?"
"I don't know. He kept wanting to know why I was in Russia, but finally gave up and just wanted me to leave. I think somebody from home hired him to find me."
"I don't want you near Abe Mazur. He's dangerous."
Dimitri was angry, and I hated that. A moment later, that fury faded, and he ran his fingers along my arm once more, pushing the strap down further.
"Of course, people like that won't be an issue when you awaken."
Somewhere in the back of my head, I wondered if Dimitri had the answers I wanted about Abe, about what Abe did. But talking about Abe had made Dimitri upset, and I cringed at that, hastily wanting to switch topics. "What have you been doing today?" I asked, impressed at my ability to make normal small talk. Between the endorphins and him touching me, coherence was difficult.
"Errands for Galina. Dinner."
Dinner. A victim. I frowned. The feelings that inspired in me weren't of repulsion so much as jealousy. "Do you drink from them for fun?" He ran his lips along my neck, teeth taunting my skin but not biting. I gasped and pressed closer to him.
"No, Rosa. They're food. That's all. It's over quickly. You're the only one I take pleasure in."
I felt smug satisfaction in that, and that annoying mental voice pointed out that that was an incredibly sick and twisted view for me to have. I kind of hoped he would bite me soon. That usually shut the rational voice up. I reached up and touched his face, then ran my hand through that wonderful silky hair that I'd always loved. "You keep wanting to awaken me, but we won't be able to do this anymore. Strigoi don't drink from each other, do they?"
"No," he agreed. "But it'll be worth it. We can do so much more."
He left the "so much more" to my imagination, and a pleasant shiver ran through me. The kissing and blood-taking were intoxicating, but there were some days that I did want, well, more. The memories of the one time we'd made love haunted me when we were this close together, and I often longed to do it again. For whatever reason, he never pushed for sex, no matter how passionate things became. I wasn't sure if he was using that as a lure for me to turn, or if there was some incompatibility between a Strigoi and a Dampier. Could the living and the dead do that? Once I would have found the thought of sex with one of them absolutely repulsive. Now, I just didn't think about the complications so much. But although he didn't attempt sex, he would often taunt me with his caresses, touching my thighs and sternum and other dangerous places. Plus, he would remind me of what it had been like that one time, how amazing it had been, how our bodies had felt. His talk of such things was more taunting than affectionate, though. In my semi-clear moments, I honestly thought it was strange that I hadn't yet consented to becoming Strigoi. The endorphin fog made me agree to almost everything else he wanted. I'd fallen comfortably into dressing up for him, staying in my gilded prison, and accepting that he took a victim every couple days. Yet even in my most incoherent moments, even when I wanted him so badly, I couldn't agree to turning. There was some intrinsic part of me that refused to budge. Most of the time, he would shrug off my refusal, like it was a joke. But every once in a while when I declined, I'd see a spark of anger in his eyes. Those moments scared me. "Here it comes," I teased, The sales pitch, eternal life, invincible, nothing to stand in our way.
It's not a joke, he said.
Oops. My flippancy had brought that hardness back to him. The desire and fondness that I had just seen now fractured into a million pieces and blew away. The hands that had just stroked me suddenly grabbed my wrists and held me in place as he leaned down.
We can't stay like this forever. You can't stay here forever.
Whoa, that voice said. Be careful. That doesn't sound good. His grip hurt, and I often wondered if that was his intent, or if he just couldn't help his violence. When he finally released me, I wrapped my arm around his neck and tried to kiss him.
Can't we talk about that later?
Our lips met, fire blossoming between us, and urgency coursing through my body. I could tell he had a matching desire, but a few seconds later, he broke away. The cold annoyance was still on his face.
Come on, he said, pulling away from me. Let's go.
He stood up, and I stared stupidly. Where are we going?
Outside.
I sat up on the bed, dumbfounded. Out? Outside? But that's not allowed. We can't.
We can do anything I want,
he snapped. He extended his hand and helped me up. I followed him to the door. He was as skilled as Ina at blocking me from the keypad. Not that it mattered now. There was no way I could ever remember that long of a sequence anymore. The door clicked open, and he led me out. I stared in wonder, my dazed brain still trying to process this freedom. As I'd noticed that one day, the door led to a short corridor blocked by another door. It too was heavy and bore a keypad lock. Dimitri opened it, and I was willing to bet the two doors had different codes. Taking my arm, he guided me through that door and into another hallway. Despite his firm hold, I couldn't help but come to a standstill. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised at the opulence I suddenly faced. After all, I was living in this place's penthouse suite. But the corridor leading out of my room had been stark and industrial-looking, and somehow I'd imagined the rest of the house to be equally institutional or prison-like. It wasn't. Instead, I felt like I was in some old movie, the kind where people took tea in the parlor. The plush carpet was covered by a gold-patterned runner that stretched off in both directions of the hall. Antique-looking paintings dotted the walls, showing people from ages ago in elaborate clothing that made my dresses look cheap and ordinary. The whole place was illuminated by tiny chandeliers that were spaced along the ceiling every 6 feet or so. The teardrop-shaped crystals caught the light with their facets, scattering small flecks of rainbows on the walls. I stared, enchanted by the glitter and the color, which is probably why I failed to notice one other fixture in the hall.
What are you doing?
The harsh sound of Nathan's voice jerked me from my crystal gazing. He'd been leaning against the wall opposite my door and straightened immediately upon seeing us. He had that same cool expression on his face that was so characteristic of Strigoi, the one I occasionally saw in Dimitri, no matter how charming and kind he seemed sometimes. Dimitri's posture turned rigid and defensive.
I'm taking her for a walk.
He kind of sounded like he was talking about a dog, but my fear of Nathan trumped any offense I might take.
That's against the rules, said Nathan. Bad enough you've still got her here. Galena gave orders for you to keep her confined. We don't need any rogue Dampier running around.
Dimitri nodded toward me.
Does she look like she's a threat?
Nathan's eyes flicked over me. I wasn't entirely sure what he saw. I didn't think I looked that different, but a small smirk crossed his lips that promptly disappeared when he turned back to Dimitri.
No, but I was ordered to babysit this door, and I'm not going to get in trouble for you taking a field trip.
I'll deal with Galena. I'll tell her I overpowered you.
Dimitri gave a fang-filled grin.
It shouldn't be that hard for her to believe.
The look Nathan gave Dimitri made me unconsciously step back until I hit the wall.
You're so full of yourself. I didn't awaken you so that you could act like you're in charge around here. I did it so that we could use your strength and inside knowledge. You should be answering to me.
Dimitri shrugged. Taking my hand, he started to turn away.
Not my fault if you're not strong enough to make me do it.
That was when Nathan lunged at Dimitri. Dimitri responded so quickly to the attack that I think he knew it would happen.
He instantly released my hand, turned to catch hold of Nathan, and tossed the other Strigoi against the wall. Nathan immediately got up. It took more than that kind of hit to face someone like him. But Dimitri was ready. He punched Nathan in the nose. Once, twice, and then a third time, all in rapid succession. Nathan fell down, blood covering his face. Dimitri kicked him hard in the stomach and loomed over him.
"Don't try it," said Dimitri. "You'll lose."
He wiped Nathan's blood off his hand and then laced his fingers through mine again.
"I told you, I'll deal with Galena. But thanks for your concern."
Dimitri turned away again, apparently feeling there'd be no more attacks. There weren't. But as I started to follow him, I cast a quick glance over my shoulder to where Nathan sat on the floor. His eyes shot daggers at Dimitri, and I was pretty sure I'd never seen a look of such pure hatred. At least until he turned his gaze on me. I felt cold all over and stumbled to keep up with Dimitri. Nathan's voice rang out behind us.
"You're not safe! Neither of you is! She's lunch, Belikov! Lunch!"
Dimitri's hand tightened on mine, and he picked up the pace. I could feel the fury radiating off of him, and suddenly wasn't sure whom I should be more afraid of, Nathan or Dimitri. Dimitri was a badass, alive or undead. In the past, I'd seen him attack foes without fear or hesitation. He'd always been magnificent, behaving just as bravely as I'd told his family. But in all those times, he'd always had a legitimate reason for fighting, usually self-defense. His confrontation with Nathan just then had been about more, though. It had been an assertion of dominance and a chance to draw blood. Dimitri had seemed to enjoy it. What if he decided to turn on me like that? What if my constant refusal pushed him into torture and he hurt me until I finally agreed? "Nathan scares me," I said, not wanting Dimitri to know that I feared him too. I felt weak and utterly defenseless, something that didn't happen to me very often. Usually I was ready to take on any challenge, no matter how desperate.
"He won't touch you," Dimitri said harshly. "You have nothing to worry about."
We reached a set of stairs. After a few steps, it became clear that I wasn't going to be able to handle four flights. Aside from the drug stupor his bites kept me in, the frequent blood loss was weakening me and taking its toll. Without saying a word, Dimitri swept me up in his arms and carried me downstairs effortlessly, gently setting me down when we reached the staircase's bottom. The main floor of the estate had the same grand feel as the upstairs hall. The entryway had a huge vaulted ceiling with an elaborate chandelier that dwarfed the little ones I'd seen. Ornate double doors faced us, set with stained glass windows. What also faced us was another Strigoi, a man sitting in a chair and apparently on guard duty. Near him was a panel set into the wall with buttons and flashing lights. A modern security system set amongst all this old-world charm. His posture stiffened as we approached, and at first, I thought it was a natural bodyguard instinct, until I saw his face. It was the Strigoi I'd tortured that first night in Novosibirsk, the one I dispatched to tell Dimitri I was looking for him. His lips curled back slightly as he met my eyes.
"Rose Hathaway," said the Strigoi. "I remember your name, just like you told me."
He said no more than that, but I tightened my grip on Dimitri's hand as we passed. The Strigoi's eyes never left me until we'd stepped outside and shut the door behind us. "He wants to kill me," I told Dimitri.
"All Strigoi want to kill you,"
Dimitri returned. "He really does. I tortured him."
"I know. He's been in disgrace ever since then and lost some of his status here."
"That doesn't make me feel any better." Dimitri seemed unconcerned.
"Marlin is no one you need to worry about. You fighting him only proved to Galena that you're a good addition around here. He's beneath you."
I didn't find that overly reassuring. I was making too many personal Strigoi enemies. But then, it wasn't like I could really expect to be making Strigoi friends. It was nighttime, of course. Dimitri wouldn't have taken me out otherwise. The foyer had made me think we were at the front of the house, but the extensive gardens that spread out around us made me wonder if we were in the back now. Or maybe the entire house was wrapped in this kind of greenery. We were surrounded in a hedge maze cut with beautiful detail. Within the maze were small courtyards decorated with fountains or statues. And everywhere were flowers and more flowers. The air was heavy with their scent, and I realized that someone had gone to an awful lot of trouble to find night-blooming ones. The only type I immediately recognized was jasmine, its long, white-flowered vines climbing up trellises and statues in the maze. We walked in silence for a bit, and I found myself lost in the romance of it all. The whole time Dimitri and I had been together at school, I'd been consumed with the fears of how we would juggle our relationship and our duty. A moment like this, walking in a garden on a spring night lit with stars, had seemed like a fantasy too crazy to even start to consider. Even without the difficulty of stairs, too much walking grew exhausting in my state. I came to a halt and sighed. "I'm tired," I said. Dimitri stopped too and helped me sit down. The grass was dry and tickly against my skin. I lay back against it, and a moment later, he joined me. I had an eerie moment of déjà vu, recalling the afternoon we'd made snow angels. "This is amazing," I said, staring up at the sky. It was clear, no clouds in sight. "What's it like for you?" "There's enough light that I can see pretty clearly, but it's still dim compared to day. Your eyes are better than mine. What do you see?"
"For me, it's as bright as day."
When I didn't respond, he added,
"It could be like that for you too."
I tried to picture that. Would the shadow seem as mysterious? Would the moon and stars shine so brightly? I don't know. I kind of like the darkness.
"Only because you don't know any better,"
I sighed. "So you keep telling me." He turned toward me and pushed the hair away from my face.
"Rose, this is driving me crazy. I'm tired of this waiting. I want us to be together. Don't you like this? What we have? It could be even better."
His words sounded romantic, but not the tone. I did like this. I loved the haze I lived in, the haze in which all worries disappeared. I loved being close to him, loved the way he kissed me and told me he wanted me. "Why?" I asked.
"Why what?"
He sounded puzzled, something I hadn't heard yet in a Strigoi. "Why do you want me?" I had no idea why I even asked that. He apparently didn't know either.
"Why wouldn't I want you?"
He spoke in such an obvious way, like it was the stupidest question in the world. It probably was, I realized. And yet, I'd somehow been expecting another answer. Just then, my stomach twisted. With all the time I'd spent with Dimitri, I really had managed to push the Strigoi nausea off my radar. The presence of other Strigoi increased it, though. I'd felt it around Nathan, and I felt it now. I sat up, and Dimitri did too, almost at the same time. He'd likely been alerted by his superior hearing. A dark shape loomed over us, blotting out the stars. It was a woman, and Dimitri shot up. I stayed where I was, on the ground. She was strikingly beautiful, in a hard and terrible way. Her build was similar to mine, indicating she hadn't been a Moroi when turned. Isaiah, the Strigoi who'd captured me, had been very old, and power had radiated from him. This woman hadn't been around nearly so long, but I could sense that she was older than Dimitri, and much stronger. She said something in Russian to him, and her voice was as cold as her beauty. Dimitri answered back, his tone confident, yet polite. I heard Nathan's name mentioned a couple of times as they spoke. Dimitri reached down and helped me up, and I felt embarrassed at how often I needed his assistance, when I used to almost be a match for him.
"Rose," he said, "this is Galina. She's the one who has been kind enough to let you stay."
Galina's face didn't look so kind. It was devoid of all emotion, and I felt like my entire soul was exposed to her. While I was uncertain of a lot of things around here, I'd picked up enough to realize that my continual residence here was a rare and fragile thing. I swallowed.
Spasibo, I said. I didn't know how to tell her it was nice to meet her, and honestly, I wasn't sure if it was. But I figured a simple thank you was good enough.
If she'd been his former instructor and trained at a normal academy, she probably knew English and was faking it like Yeva. I had no clue why she'd do that, but if you could snap a teen Dompier's neck, you were entitled to do whatever you wanted. Galena's expression, or lack thereof, didn't change with my thanks, and she turned her attention back to Dimitri. They conversed over me, and Dimitri gestured to me a couple of times. I recognized the word for strong. Finally, Galena issued something that sounded final and left us without any sort of goodbye. Neither Dimitri nor I moved until I felt the nausea dissipate.
Come on, he said. We should get back.
We walked back through the maze, though I had no idea how he knew where to go. It was funny. When I'd first arrived, my dream had been to get outside and escape. Now that I was here, well, it didn't seem that important. Galena's anger did.
What did she say? I asked.
She doesn't like that you're still here. She wants me to awaken you. Or kill you.
Oh. What are you gonna do?
He stayed silent for a few seconds.
I'll wait a little longer. And then I will make the choice for you.
He didn't specify which choice he'd be making, and I almost began my earlier pleas to die before becoming Strigoi. But suddenly, instead, I said, How long?
Not long, Rosa. You'll need to choose. And make the right choice.
Which is? He held up his hands.
All of this. A life together.
We'd emerged from the maze. I stared at the house, which was crazy enormous when viewed from the outside, and at the beautiful gardens around us. It was like something from a dream. Beyond that, endless countryside rolled away, eventually becoming lost in the darkness and blending into the black sky, except for one tiny part that had a soft purple glow on the horizon. I frowned, studying it, then turned my attention back to Dimitri.
And what then?
Then I work for Galena too?
For a while.
How long is a while? We came to a stop outside the house. Dimitri looked down into my eyes, his face alight with a look that made me take a step back.
Until we kill her, Rose. Until we kill her and take all of this for ourselves.
Chapter 21 Dimitri didn't elaborate. I was too startled by his words and the rest of the night's events to even know how to begin to address them. He took me back inside, past the Strigoi on guard duty, and upstairs to my suite. Nathan was no longer outside. For a few brief moments, that nagging voice in my head spoke loudly enough to break through my addled thoughts. If I had no guard in the hall, and Ina returned soon, I had a very good chance of threatening her enough to get out of here. Admittedly, that would mean I'd have to deal with a house of God only knew how many Strigoi, but my escape odds were better in the house than in this room. Then almost as soon as those thoughts appeared, they vanished. Dimitri snaked his arm around me and pulled me to him. It had been chilly outside, and even if his body was cold, his clothes and jacket provided some warmth. I snuggled closer to him as his hands ran all over me. I thought he was going to bite me, but it was our mouths that met, hard and furious. I wrapped my fingers in his hair, trying to pull him closer to me. Meanwhile, his fingers were running against my bare leg, pushing my skirt up almost to my hip. Anticipation and eagerness lit every part of my body. I had dreamed about the cabin for so long, remembering it with so much longing. I'd never expected anything like that to happen again, but now it could, and I was astonished at how badly I wanted it. My hands moved down to his shirt, undoing all the buttons so that I could touch his chest. His skin still felt like ice, a startling contrast to the burning within me. He moved his lips from mine, down to my neck and shoulder, pushing down the dress's strap as he covered my flesh with hungry kisses. His hand was still on the side of my bare hip, and I frantically tried to pull his shirt off altogether. Suddenly, with a surprising abruptness, he jerked away and shoved me down. At first, I thought it was just more of the foreplay between us, until I realized he was purposely pushing me away.
"No," he said, voice hard. "Not yet. Not until you're awakened."
"Why?" I asked desperately. I couldn't think of anything except him touching me, and, well, another bite. "Why does it matter? Is there a reason we can't?" Until I'd come here, sex with a Strigoi had never occurred to me. Maybe it just wasn't possible. He leaned toward me, putting his lips near my ear.
"No, but it'll be so much better if you're awakened. Let me do it. Let me do it, and then we can do anything we want."
It was a bargaining chip, I realized vaguely. He wanted me. It was written all over him. But he was using the lure of sex to get me to give in. And honestly, I was this close to accepting. My body was overriding my mind, nearly. "No," I whimpered. I'm scared." That dangerous look softened, and while he didn't exactly look like the Dimitri from before, there was something a little less Strigoi about him.
"Rose, do you think I'd do anything that would hurt you?"
Somewhere, hadn't there been a discussion about how my options were to turn or die? The latter seemed like it might hurt, but I didn't mention that just now. "The bite. The turning would hurt."
"I told you. It'll be just like what we've already done. You'll enjoy it. It won't hurt. I swear it."
I looked away. Damn it. Why couldn't he still be sinister and scary? It was so much easier to put my foot down and resist. Even in the heat of passion, I was able to resist. But somehow, seeing him like this, calm and reasonable, well, it was too close to the Dimitri I'd loved. And that was hard to turn away from. For the first time, it made turning Strigoi seem not so bad. "I don't know," I said lamely. He released me and sat up, frustration filling his features. It was almost a relief.
"Galena's patience is running out. So is mine."
"You said we still have time. I just need to think more." How long could I use that excuse? The narrowing of his eyes told me not much longer.
"I have to go,"
he said harshly. There would be no more touching or kissing, I could tell.
"I need to deal with some things."
"I'm sorry," I said, both confused and afraid. I didn't know which Dimitri I wanted. The terrifying one, the sensual one, or the almost, but still not quite, gentle one. He said nothing. Without any other warning, he leaned down and bit into the tender skin of my throat. Whatever feeble escape strategies I had were gone. I closed my eyes, nearly falling over, and only his arm wrapped firmly around me kept me upright. Just like when we kissed, his mouth was warm against my flesh, and the feel of his tongue and teeth sent electricity through me. And like that, it was over. He pulled away, licking his lips as he still continued to hold on to me. The fog was back. The world was wonderful and happy, and I was without any cares. Whatever he'd been worrying about with Nathan and Galena meant nothing to me. The fear I'd felt moments ago, my disappointment over sex, my confusion. I didn't have time to worry about any of that. Not when life was so beautiful and I loved Dimitri so much. I smiled up at him and tried to hug him again, but he was already leading me to the couch.
"I'll see you later."
In a flash, he was at the door, which saddened me. I wanted him to stay. Stay forever.
"Remember, I want you. And I would never let anything bad happen to you. I'll protect you. But I can't wait much longer."
With that, he left. His words made me smile more broadly. Dimitri wanted me. Vaguely, I recalled asking him outside why he wanted me.
Why on earth had I asked? What answer had I wanted? Why did it matter? He wanted me. That was what counted. That thought and the wonderful endorphin rush enveloped me as I lay on the couch, and I felt drowsiness overtaking me. Walking over to the bed seemed like too much work, so I stayed where I was and just let sleep come. And, unexpectedly, I found myself in one of Adrian's dreams. I'd pretty much given up on him. After my first desperate attempts at escape in the suite, I'd finally convinced myself that Adrian wasn't coming back, that I'd send him away for good. Yet, here he was, standing right in front of me. Or, well, at least his dream version was. Often we were in the woods, or a garden. But today we stood where we'd first met, on the porch of an Idaho ski lodge. Sun shone down and mountains soared off to the side of us. I grinned broadly. Adrian! I didn't think I'd ever seen him look as surprised as he did just then, considering how mean I usually was to him. I could understand his feelings.
Hello, Rose, he said.
His voice sounded uncertain, like he was worried I might be playing a trick on him. You look good today, I told him. It was true. He wore dark jeans and a printed button-down shirt in shades of navy and turquoise that looked fantastic with his dark green eyes. Those eyes, however, looked weary, worn. That was a little odd. In these dreams, he could shape the world and even our appearances to what he wanted, with only a little effort. He could have looked perfect, but instead appeared to be reflecting real-world fatigue.
So do you.
His voice was still wary, as he eyed me from head to toe. I was still in the clingy sundress, my hair down and loose, the sapphires around my neck.
That looks like something I'd normally dress you in. Are you asleep in that?
Yep. I smoothed down the dress's skirt, thinking how pretty it looked. I wondered if Dimitri had liked it. He hadn't said so specifically, but he had kept telling me I was beautiful. I didn't think you'd come back.
I didn't think I would either.
I looked back up at him. He wasn't like his usual self at all. Are you trying to figure out where I am again?
No, I don't care about that anymore, he sighed. The only thing I care about is that you aren't here. You have to come back, Rose.
I crossed my arms and flounced under the porch's railing. Adrian, I'm not ready for anything romantic.
Not for me, he exclaimed. For her. You have to come back for Lyssa, that's why I'm here.
Lyssa. My waking self was pumped full of endorphins, and it carried over here. I tried to remember why I should be so worried about Lyssa. Adrian took a step forward and studied me carefully.
Yeah, you know Lyssa, your best friend, the one you're bonded to and sworn to protect.
I swung my legs back and forth. I never made any vows.
What the hell's the matter with you?
I didn't like his agitated tone. It was ruining my good mood.
What's the matter with you?
You aren't acting like yourself. Your aura. He frowned, unable to continue. I laughed.
Oh, yes. Here it comes. The magical, mystical aura. Let me guess, it's black, right?
No. It... He continued scrutinizing me for several heavy seconds. I can barely get a fix on it.
It's all over the place.
What's going on, Rose? What's happening in the waking world?
Nothing's happening, I said. Nothing except me being happy for the first time in my life. Why are you acting weird all of a sudden? You used to be fun. Figures the first time I'm finally having a good time, you go all boring and strange.
He knelt down in front of me, no trace of humor anywhere.
There's something wrong with you. I can't tell what. I told you I'm fine. Why do you have to keep coming and trying to ruin things for me?
True, I'd desperately wanted him to come a little while ago, but now, well, that wasn't so important. I had a good thing with Dimitri here, if only I could figure out how to solve all the not-so-good parts.
I told you, I'm not here for me, I'm here for Lyssa.
He looked up at me, wide-eyed and earnest.
Rose, I am begging you to come home. Lyssa needs you. I don't know what's wrong. and I don't know how to help her. No one else does either. I think only you can. Maybe being apart is what's hurting her. Maybe that's what's wrong with you now. Why you're acting so weird. Come home, please. We'll heal both of you. We'll all figure it out together. She's acting so strange. She's reckless and doesn't care about anything.
I shook my head. Being away isn't what's wrong with me. Probably not what's wrong with her either. If she's really worried about Spirit, she should go back on her meds.
She's not worried. That's the problem, damn it!
He stood up and began pacing.
What's wrong with you two? Why can't either of you see there's something the matter?
Maybe it's not us, I said. Maybe it's you imagining things. Adrian turned back toward me and looked me over again.
No, it's not me.
I didn't like any of this. Not his tone, expression, or words. I'd been excited to see him, but now I resented him ruining my good mood. I didn't want to think about any of this. It was too hard.
Look, I said. I was happy to see you tonight, but not anymore. Not if you're going to sit and accuse me and make demands.
I'm not trying to do that.
His voice was gentle. The anger was gone.
The last thing I want is to make you unhappy. I care about you. I care about Lyssa, too. I want you both to be happy and live your lives like you want. But not when you're both heading down destructive paths.
He almost made sense. Almost seemed reasonable and sincere. I shook my head.
Stay out of it. I'm where I want to be, and I'm not coming back. Lyssa's on her own.
I jumped off the rail. The world swirled a little, and I stumbled. Adrian caught my hand, and I jerked away.
I'm fine. You are not! Jesus Christ! I'd swear you're drunk, except...
The aura's still not right for that.
What is it?
He ran his hands through his dark hair. It was his typical sign of agitation.
I'm done here, I said, trying to be as polite as possible.
Why on earth had I wanted to see him again? It had seemed so important when I first arrived.
Send me back, please.
He opened his mouth to say something, then froze a few moments.
What's on your neck?
He reached forward, and addled or no, I managed to dodge pretty efficiently. I had no idea what he saw on my neck, and I had no interest in finding out. Don't touch me.
Rose, that looks like... Send me back, Adrian.
So much for my politeness.
Rose, let me help. Send me back.
I shouted the words, and then, for the first time, I managed to pull myself out of Adrian's dream. I left sleep altogether and woke up on the couch. The room was still and silent. The only sound my rapid breathing. I felt all tangled up inside. Usually, so fresh from a bite, I would be floating and gleeful. Yet, the encounter with Adrian had left part of me troubled and sad. Standing up, I managed to make my way to the bathroom. I flicked on the light and winced. It hadn't been very bright in the other room. Once my eyes adjusted, I leaned toward the mirror and pushed my hair out of the way.
I gasped at what I saw. There were bruises all over my neck, as well as signs of fresher wounds.
Around where Dimitri had just bitten me, I could see dried blood. I looked like a blood whore.
How had I never noticed this before?
I wet a washcloth and scrubbed at my neck, trying to get the blood off. I rubbed and rubbed until the skin turned pink. Was that it? Were there more? That looked like the worst of it. I wondered how much Adrian had seen. My hair had been down, and I was pretty sure most of it had covered my neck. A rebellious thought came to my head. What did it matter if Adrian saw or not? He didn't understand. There was no way he could even come close. I was with Dimitri. Yeah, he was different, but not that much different. And I was sure I could find a way to make this work without becoming a Strigoi. I just didn't know how yet. I tried to reassure myself over and over, but those bruises kept staring back at me. I left the bathroom and returned to the couch. I turned on the TV without really watching, and after a while, the happy fog rolled over me again. I soon tuned out the TV and returned to sleep. This time, my dreams were my own. It took a while for Dimitri to come again. And by a while, I mean almost an entire day. I was getting twitchy by that point, both because I missed him and because I missed the bite. He usually visited twice a day, so this was the longest I'd gone without the endorphins. Needing something to do, I preoccupied myself with making myself as beautiful as possible. I sorted through the dresses in my closet, choosing a long ivory silk one that had purple flowers delicately painted into the fabric. It fit like a glove. I wanted to wear my hair up, but after looking at the bruises again, I decided to wear it down. I'd been provided with a curling iron and makeup recently, so I worked my hair over carefully, turning the ends up in perfect little curls. Once made up, I stared happily at my reflection, certain Dimitri would be happy too. All I needed now was to put on some of the exquisite jewelry he'd given me. But when I turned to leave, I caught a glimpse of my back from the side and saw I'd missed fastening a clasp. I reached around to do it, but couldn't get a hold of it. It was in that perfect spot just out of my reach. "Damn," I muttered, still grappling with the hook, the flaw in my perfection. Just then, I heard the door open in the other room, followed by the telltale sound of a tray being set on the coffee table. A stroke of luck. "Ina," I called, walking out of the bathroom. "I need you to..." Nausea rolled through me, and as I stepped into the living room, I saw that Dimitri wasn't the source. Nathan was. My jaw dropped open. Ina stood near him, waiting patiently by the tray, eyes downcast as always. I immediately ignored her, and then looked back at Nathan. Presumably, he was still on guard duty, but that had never actually included him coming inside. For the first time in a while, some of my battle instincts kicked in, assessing escape options. My fear urged me to back away, but that would trap me in the bathroom. Best to stay where I was. Even if I couldn't leave the room, this gave me the most space to maneuver. "What are you doing here?" I asked, surprised at how calm I sounded.
"Taking care of a problem."
I didn't really need any pointers to figure out the subtext here. I was the problem. Again, I fought the urge to back up. "I've never done anything to you." It was faulty logic to a Strigoi. None of their victims ever did anything to them.
"You exist," he said. "You're taking up space here, wasting everyone's time. You know how to find her, the Dragomir girl. Yet you'll offer nothing remotely useful until Belikov gets off his ass and awakens you. And in the meantime, Galena forces me to waste time watching you and keeps promoting him, because he's convinced her that you're going to be some amazing asset to us."
It was an interesting set of grievances.
"So, what are you going to do?"
In a flash, he stood in front of me. Seeing him so close triggered that memory in my mind's eye. Him biting Dimitri and starting all of this. A spark of anger kindled in me, but didn't do much in the way of development.
"I'm getting the information one way or another," he hissed. "Tell me where she is."
"You know where she is. She's at the school." There was nothing useful in giving up that news. He knew she was there. He knew where the school was. The look he gave me showed he was not happy about me providing knowledge he already had. Reaching out, he gripped my hair and jerked my head painfully back. Wearing my hair down maybe hadn't been so useful after all.
"Where is she going? She won't stay there forever. Is she going to college, the royal court? They must have made plans for her."
"I don't know what they are. I've been away for a while."
"I don't believe you," he snarled. "She's too valuable. Her future would have been planned out a while ago."
"If it is, no one shared it with me. I left too soon."
I shrugged by way of answer. Rage filled his eyes, and I swear they grew redder. "You're bonded. You know. Tell me now, and I'll kill you quickly. If you don't, I'll awaken you to get the information, and then I'll kill you. I'll light you up like a bonfire."
You'd kill me once I was one of you?"
Foolish question. Strigoi felt no loyalty to each other. "Yes, it'll destroy him. And once Galena sees how unhinged he is, I will return to my original place by your side. Especially after I stamp out the Dragomir line."
"The hell you will."
He smiled and touched my face, running his fingers along my neck and the bruises all over it. "Oh, I will. It really will make things easier if you just tell me now. You'll die in ecstasy rather than being burned alive. We'll both enjoy it.
He wrapped his hand delicately around my throat.
You're definitely a problem, but you are beautiful. Especially your throat. I can see why he wants you.
Warring emotions played within me. Logically, I knew this was Nathan. Nathan, whom I hated for having turned to Mitri in the first place. Yet my body's need for Strigoi endorphins was raising its head, too. And it barely mattered that it was Nathan. What mattered was that his teeth were only a breath away from my neck, promising that sweet, sweet delirium. And while one hand held my throat, the other ran down my waist, down to the curve of my hip. There had been a sultry edge to Nathan's voice, like he wanted to do more than just bite me. And after so many sexually charged encounters with Dimitri, encounters that never resulted in anything, my body almost didn't care who touched it. I could close my eyes, and it wouldn't matter whose teeth bit into me or whose hands peeled off my clothes. Only the next fix would matter. I could close my eyes and pretend it was Dimitri, lost in it all as Nathan's lips brushed my skin. Except, as some small reasonable part of me recalled, Nathan didn't just want sex and blood. He eventually wanted to kill me. Which was kind of ironic. I'd been dead set, no pun intended, on killing myself when I got here, lest I become a Strigoi. Nathan was offering me that now. Even if he turned me first, he planned on killing me immediately afterward. Either way, I wouldn't have to spend eternity as a Strigoi. I should have welcomed this. But just then, as my body's addiction screamed for his bite and that bliss, I realized something with startling clarity. I didn't want to die. Maybe it was because I'd gone almost a day without a bite, but something small and rebellious woke up in me. I would not let him do this to me. I would not let him go after Dimitri. And I sure as hell wasn't going to let him hunt down Lyssa. Pushing through that endorphin cloud that still hung around me, I summoned up as much willpower as I could. I dug deep, remembering my years of training and all the lessons Dimitri had given me. It was hard to access those memories, and I only touched a few. Still, enough came to spur me to action. I lunged forward and punched Nathan. And accomplished nothing. He didn't budge. Hell, I don't even know if he felt it. The surprise on his face promptly turned to mirth, and he laughed in that horrible way Strigoi did. Cruelly and without any real joy. Then, with the greatest of ease, he slapped me and knocked me across the room. Dimitri had done nearly the same thing when I'd arrived and attacked him. Only I hadn't flown quite as far or had so minuscule an effect on him. I slammed into the back of the couch, and good God did it hurt. A wave of dizziness washed over me, and I realized the idiocy of fighting someone vastly stronger than me when I'd been losing blood all week. I managed to straighten up and desperately sought my next course of action. Nathan, for his part, seemed in no hurry to respond to my attack. In fact, he was still laughing. Glancing around, I latched onto a truly pitiful course of action. Ina stood near me, moving with a speed that was painfully slow, but better than I expected myself to manage. I reached for her and wrapped my arm around her neck. She yelped in surprise, and I jerked her harder against me. "Get out of here," I said to Nathan. "Get out of here or I'll kill her." He stopped laughing, stared at me for a moment, and then laughed even harder.
"Are you serious? Do you honestly think I couldn't stop you if I wanted? And do you honestly think I care? Go ahead, kill her. There are dozens more just like her."
Yeah, that really shouldn't have been a surprise either, but even I was a bit taken aback by how easily he could throw away a faithful servant's life. Okay, time to go to Plan B. Or maybe it was Plan J. Frankly, I was losing track and none of them were very good anyway. "Ow!" Ina suddenly elbowed me in the stomach. I released her in my surprise. She spun around with a strangled scream and socked me in the face. The blow wasn't as hard as Nathan's had been, but it still knocked me over. I tried to catch a hold of something, anything, as I fell but failed. I hit the floor, my back slamming against the door. I expected her to come right back at me, but instead, she darted across the room and,
God help us all, threw herself into a defensive posture in front of Nathan. Before I could fully process the weirdness of her trying to protect someone who was willing to let her die, the door suddenly opened. "Ow!" I said again, as it hit me and pushed me aside. Dimitri swiftly entered. He looked from face to face, and I had no doubt mine showed signs of both Nathan's and Ina's attacks. Dimitri's fists clenched, and he turned toward Nathan. It reminded me of their scuffle in the hallway, all rage and malice and bloodlust. I cringed, bracing myself for another horrible confrontation.
"Don't," warned Nathan, face smug. "You know what Galena said. Touch me and you're out of here."
Dimitri strode across the room and came to stand in front of Nathan, knocking Ina aside like a rag doll.
"It'll be worth facing her wrath, particularly when I tell her you attacked first. Rose certainly bears the marks of it."
"You wouldn't."
He pointed at Ina, who was sitting dazed on the floor from where Dimitri had knocked her over. Despite my own injuries, I began crawling over to her. I had to know if she was all right.
"She'll tell the truth."
Now Dimitri looked smug.
"You really think Galena will believe a human? No. When I tell her how you attacked me and Rose out of jealousy, she'll let me off. The fact that you'll be so easily defeated will be proof of your weakness. I'll slice your head off and get Rose's stake from the vault. With your last breath, you can watch her drive it through your heart."
Holy crap. That was a little worse than Nathan threatening to burn me. Wait, my stake? Nathan's face still bore haughty arrogance, at least to me. But I think Dimitri must have seen something that satisfied him, something that made him think he'd gotten the upper hand. He visibly relaxed, his smirk growing larger.
"Twice," Dimitri said softly. "Twice I've let you go. Next time you're gone."
I reached Ina and gently held out my hand. "Are you okay?" I murmured. With a look of hate, she recoiled and scooted away. Nathan's eyes fell on me, and he began backing toward the door.
"No," he said. "Twice I've let her live. Next time, she's gone. I'm the one in control here, not you."
Nathan opened the door, and Ina stood up, stumbling after him. I stared, mouth agape at the events that had just taken place. I didn't know which of them I found more disturbing. Looking up at Dimitri, I grappled with what to ask him first. What were we going to do? Why had Ina defended Nathan?
Why had Dimitri let him go?
None of those defiant questions came to my lips, though. Instead, I burst into tears. Chapter 22. I didn't cry very often, and I hated it when I did. The last time I'd done it around Dimitri, his arms had immediately encircled me. This time, all I got was a look of coldness and anger.
"This is your fault,"
he yelled, fists clenched. I cringed backward, eyes wide. "But he attacked me."
"Yes, and Ina, a human, you let a human attack you."
He couldn't keep the sneer from his voice.
"You are weak. You are incapable of defending yourself. All because you refuse to be awakened."
His voice was terrifying, and the look he gave me, well, it scared me almost more than Nathan had. Reaching forward, he jerked me up to my feet.
"If you had just been killed, it would have been your own fault," he said.
His fingers dug into my wrist as he shook me.
"You have the chance for immortality, for incredible strength, and you're too blind and stubborn to see it."
I swallowed back more tears and rubbed my eyes with the back of my free hand. No doubt I was ruining the makeup I'd so painstakingly put on. My heart was ready to explode out of my chest. I was so afraid. I expected rage and threats from Nathan, but not Dimitri. "You've forgotten he's a Strigoi," something whispered in my mind. I'd gone long enough without a bite, and had enough adrenaline kicking me to alertness that my nagging voice was speaking more loudly than it had in a very long time. Dimitri said I was weak, because I wasn't Strigoi, but there was more to it than that. I was weak and had been subdued by Nathan and Ina because I was an addict, because I was living a life of blissful ignorance that was taking a toll on my body and my mind. The thought was startling, and I could barely hold on to it. My yearning for vampire endorphins flared up, and the two factions warred in my mind. I had enough sense not to voice any of those thoughts. I tried for something that would pacify Dimitri instead. I don't think I'd be stronger than Nathan, even if I was Tern. Awakened. He ran a hand over my hair, his cold voice thoughtful. He seemed to be calming down, but his eyes were still angry and impatient.
Perhaps not initially, but your strength of body and will carries over with the change. He's not that much older than either of us. Not enough to make a noticeable difference. Which is why he keeps backing down when we fight.
Why do you keep backing down? I felt his body go rigid, and I realized my question might be read as a slam against his prowess. I swallowed, my fear returning. He hadn't let go of my wrist, and it was starting to hurt.
Because he's right about one thing, Dimitri said stiffly. Killing him would bring Galena's wrath down on us. And that's not something I can afford. Yet.
You said before that we had to kill her.
Yes, and once we do, it'll be easy to seize control of her assets and organization.
What is her organization exactly? If I kept distracting him, the anger might go away. The monster might go away.
He shrugged. All sorts of things. This wealth isn't bought without effort.
Effort that's illegal and hurts humans?
Does it matter?
I didn't bother with an answer. But Galena used to be your teacher. Can you really kill her? And I don't mean physically. I mean, doesn't it bother you? He considered.
I told you before. It's all about strength and weakness. Prey and predator. If we can bring her down, and I have no doubts we can, then she's prey. End of story.
I shivered. It was so harsh. Such a stark and scary way of viewing the world. Dimitri released my wrist just then, and a wave of relief ran through me. On shaky legs, I backed up and sat on the couch. For a moment, I feared he'd grab me again, but instead, he sat down beside me. Why did Ina attack me? Why did she defend Nathan?
Because she loves him.
Dimitri didn't bother hiding his disgust. But how?
Who knows? Part of it is that he promised to awaken her once she put in time here.
Sydney's warnings came back to me about why the alchemists feared that humans would learn about vampires, because humans might want to turn too.
That's what most of the human servants are told.
Told?
Most are unworthy. Or, more often than not, someone gets hungry and finishes the human off.
I was getting sick to my stomach, independent of Dimitri's proximity. This is all a mess.
It doesn't have to be.
I didn't think he would shake me again, but there was a dangerous glint in his eyes. The monster was only a heartbeat away.
Time's running out. I've been lenient, Rosa. Far more lenient than I would be with anyone else.
Why? Why have you done it? I wanted, needed then, to hear him say it was because he loved me, and that because of that love, he could never force me into anything I didn't want. I needed to hear it so that I could blot out that terrifying, furious creature I'd seen a few minutes ago.
Because I know how you think, and I know awakening you of your own free will would make you a more important ally. You're independent and strong-minded. That's what makes you valuable.
An ally, huh? Not the woman he loved. He shifted so that his face hovered over mine.
Didn't I tell you once I'd always be there for you? I'm here. I'll protect you. We're going to be together. We're meant to be together, you know this.
There was more fierceness in his voice than affection. He kissed my lips, drawing me close. The usual heat flooded me, my body instantly responding to his. But even as my body did one thing, other thoughts were spinning through my mind.
I had always thought we were meant to be together. And he had once told me he'd always be there for me. I'd always wanted that too. But I had wanted to be there for him in return. I wanted us to be equals, always watching each other's backs. Today hadn't been like that. I'd been defenseless. Weak. Never, never in my life had I been like that. Even in horrible outmatched moments, I'd put up a decent fight. At the very least, I'd had the will to fight. Not now. I'd been terrified. I'd been ineffectual. I hadn't been able to do anything except sit there pathetically and wait for someone to rescue me. I'd let a human get the best of me. Dmitri said me becoming Strigoi was the solution. For the last week, he'd said that over and over, and while I hadn't agreed to it, I hadn't been as repulsed as I once had been. Lately, it had become a thought floating around out there, a far-off way for us to be together. And I did want to be together, especially in moments like this, when we kissed and desire crackled around us both. But this time, the desire wasn't quite as intense as usual. It was still there, but I couldn't shake the image of how he'd just been. It occurred to me with startling clarity that I was making out with a Strigoi. And that was weird. Breathing heavy, Dmitri pulled away from my lips for a moment and stared at me. Even with that composed Strigoi expression, I could see that he wanted me, in a lot of ways. It was confusing. He was Dmitri and not Dmitri. Leaning back down, he kissed my cheek, then my chin, and then my neck. His mouth opened wider, and I started to feel the points of his fangs. "No," I blurted out. He froze.
"What did you say?"
My heart started thumping again as I braced myself for more rage. No, not this time. He pulled back and looked at me, seeming both shocked and annoyed. When he didn't respond, I began to ramble. "I don't feel good. I'm hurt. I'm afraid to lose the blood, even though I want..." Dmitri always said I couldn't lie to him, but I had to try. I put on my best, most passionate and innocent face. "I want it. I want to feel the bite, but I want to rest first, get stronger."
"Let me awaken you and you'll be strong again."
"I know," I said, still keeping my voice slightly frantic. I looked away, hoping to increase the facade of confusion. Okay, with my life lately, faking confusion wasn't that hard. "And I'm starting to think..." I heard a sharp intake of breath.
"Starting to think what?"
I turned back to him, hoping I could convince him I was seriously considering turning. "I'm starting to think that I don't ever want to be weak again." I could see it in his face. He believed me. But then, that last part hadn't been a lie. I didn't want to be weak. "Please, I just want to rest. I need to think about it a little more." There it was, the moment this all weighed on. The truth was, I wasn't just lying to him. I was lying to myself. Because seriously, I wanted that bite. Badly. I'd already gone a long time without one, and my body was screaming for it. I needed the endorphins, needed them more than air or food. And yet, in only one day without them, I'd gained a tiny shard of clarity. The part of me that wanted nothing more than the joy of ignorant ecstasy didn't care about my mind growing clearer. Yet I knew, deep inside, that I had to try for a little bit more, even if it meant depriving myself of what I most wanted. After a lot of thought, Dmitri nodded and stood up. He'd read my words like I'd reached a turning point and was on the verge of accepting.
"Rest then," he said, "and we'll talk later." "But Rose, we only have 2 days.
2 days?
"Until Galena's deadline. That's how long she gave us. Then I make the decision for you."
"You'll awaken me?" I wasn't entirely sure if death was on the table anymore.
"Yes. It'll be better for all of us if we don't reach that point."
He got off the bed and stood up. He paused a moment and reached into his pocket.
Oh, I brought you this.
He handed me a bracelet encrusted with opals and tiny diamonds, almost like it was no big deal. The bracelet was dazzling, and each opal shone with 1,000 colors.
Wow. It's gorgeous.
I slipped it on my wrist. Yet somehow, gifts like this didn't mean as much anymore. With a satisfied look, he leaned down and kissed me on the forehead. He headed for the door then and left me lying back against the couch, trying desperately to think of anything else except how I wished he would turn around and bite me. The rest of the day was agonizing. I'd always read about addicts, about how hard a time people had breaking away from alcohol or illegal drugs. I'd even once witnessed a feeder go kind of crazy when he was removed from service. He'd grown too old, and it was considered hazardous to his health to keep on giving blood to Maroy. I'd watched in amazement as he begged and pleaded to be allowed to stay, how he'd sworn he didn't mind the risk. Even though I'd known he had an addiction, I just couldn't understand why it would be so worth it for him to risk his life like that. Now I did. In those hours that passed, I would have risked my life to be bitten again. That was actually kind of funny because if I did allow another bite, I would be risking my life. I had no doubt more of that cloudy thinking would lead to an acceptance of Dimitri's offer. But with each miserable, bite-deprived second that passed, my thoughts grew incrementally sharper. Oh, I was still a long way away from being free of the dreamy haze of vampire endorphins. When we'd been captured in Spokane, Eddie had been used as a Strigoi blood source, and it had taken him days to recover. Each bit of clarity now made me realize how important it was for me to stay bite-free. Not that that knowledge made it any easier on my body. I had some serious problems here. It seemed like either way, I was destined to become a Strigoi. Dimitri wanted to turn me so that we could reign together as the vampiric equivalent of Bonnie and Clyde. Nathan wanted to turn me in the hopes of hunting down Lyssa, and then kill me. Clearly, Dimitri's option was more appealing, but not by much. Not anymore. Yesterday, I would have said becoming a Strigoi was something I wasn't going to worry about too much. Now, the harsh reality of what it truly meant hit me, and my old feelings returned. Suicide versus existence as a creature of evil. Of course, being a creature of evil meant I could be with Dimitri. Except it wasn't Dimitri, was it? It was all so confusing. I again tried to remind myself of what he'd said long ago. That no matter how much a Strigoi seemed like the person I used to know, they weren't. Yet this Dimitri said he'd been wrong about that.
It's the endorphins, Rose. They're like drugs.
I groaned and buried my face in my hands as I sat on the couch, the TV droning in the background. Lovely. I was talking to myself now. Supposing I could break this hold Dimitri had over me and this addled state that kept making me think I'd misunderstood Strigoi. Well, then what? I was back to the original dilemma. No weapons to fight Strigoi with, no weapons with which to kill myself. I was back at their mercy, but at least now I was closer to putting up a good fight. Sure, it would be a losing fight, but I felt that if I stayed off the endorphins a little longer, I'd at least be able to take down Ina. That had to count for something. And there it was, off the endorphins. Each time my mind ran through my options and hit a wall, I would spiral back to the physical reality in front of me. I wanted that high back. I wanted that haze of joy back. I needed it back, or surely I would die. That would be what killed me and freed me from being a Strigoi. Damn it! I stood up and began pacing around, hoping to distract myself. TV wasn't doing it, that was for sure. If I could just hold out a little longer, I could shake the drug from my system. I could figure out how to save myself and Lyssa. And Lyssa! Without any debate, I dove into her. If I was in her body and mind, then maybe I wouldn't have to deal with mine for a while. My withdrawal would pass more quickly. Lyssa and her group had returned from the royal court a bit more grimly than they arrived. The cold light of morning had made Lyssa feel incredibly idiotic about the party's events. Dancing on a table wasn't the worst thing in the world, but looking back over other parties she'd been to that weekend, and her social life with Avery, made her wonder what had gotten into her. Sometimes, she didn't even feel like herself. And the kiss with Aaron. Well, that was an entirely different guilt-inducing matter altogether.
"Don't worry about it," Avery told her on the plane. "We all do stupid stuff when we're drunk."
"Not me," groaned Lissa. "This isn't like me." Despite this claim, Lissa had nonetheless agreed to drink mimosas, champagne mixed with orange juice, on the ride back. Avery smiled.
"I don't have anything to compare it to. You seem okay to me. But then, you aren't trying to run off with a human or some non-royal guy."
Lissa smiled back, and her eyes went to Jill, sitting a little ahead of them on the plane. Adrian had spoken to the younger girl earlier, but she was busy with a book now, her biggest concern seeming to be to stay away from Reed. He sat with Simon again, and Lissa was a little surprised to see the guardian eyeing Jill suspiciously. Maybe Reed had told Simon that the younger girl was some kind of threat.
"You're worried about her?"
asked Avery, following Lissa's gaze.
"It's not that. I just can't shake the way she looked at me last night."
"She's young. I think she's easily shocked."
Lissa supposed that was true. Yet, young or not, there had been something refreshingly clear and honest in the way Jill had called Lissa out. It reminded Lissa of something I might do. And Lissa couldn't rest easy knowing someone like that thought badly of her. Lissa stood up.
"I'll be right back," she told Avery. "I'm going to talk to her."
Jill was obviously astonished when Lissa sat beside her. The younger girl put a bookmark in what she was reading, and whatever she might be feeling, her smile for Lissa was genuine.
"Hey."
"Hey," said Lissa. She hadn't had much of the mimosa yet, and still controlled enough spirit to see Jill's aura. It was a rich teal blue, interspersed with purple and darker blue. Good, strong colors.
"Look, I wanted to apologize for what happened last night, what I said."
"Oh," said Jill, flushing.
"It's okay, really. I mean, things are kind of crazy, and I know you weren't thinking straight. At least, I don't think you were. I don't really know. I've never actually had a drink, so I can't say."
Jill's nervousness always seemed to make her oscillate between rambling and silence.
"Yeah, well, I should have been thinking straight before I got in that situation. And I'm really sorry for what happened with Reed."
Lissa lowered her voice. "No clue what happened there. But that wasn't right, what he did and said to you." Both girls found themselves studying him. He was deep in a book, but suddenly, as though he could sense them watching, his gaze turned toward Jill and Lissa. He glared, and they immediately looked away.
"That definitely wasn't your fault," said Jill. "And, you know, Adrian was there and everything, so it turned out okay."
Lissa worked to keep a straight face. Adrian was sitting out of their view, but if he hadn't been, Lissa had a feeling Jill would have been gazing at him dreamily. Adrian was doing a good deal of gazing of his own at Avery lately, and Lissa could see Jill was never going to leave that little sister role for him. Yet it seemed clear that Jill was developing a little bit of a crush. It was cute, and even though Lissa knew it was stupid on her part, she couldn't help feeling a bit of relief that Adrian was the object of Jill's affections and not Christian.
"Well, here's hoping for better choices," said Lissa, "and hoping no one thinks too badly of me."
"I don't," said Jill, "and I'm sure Christian won't either." Lissa frowned, confused for a moment.
"Well, there's no point in stressing him out over it. It was my stupid mistake. I'll deal with it."
Now Jill frowned. She hesitated before speaking, that old nervousness returning.
"But you have to. You have to tell him the truth, right?"
"It's no big deal," said Lissa, surprised at how defensive she suddenly felt. That unpredictable anger started to raise its head.
"But you guys are in a serious relationship. You have to always be honest, don't you? I mean, you can't lie to him."
Lissa rolled her eyes.
"Jill, you haven't been in a serious relationship either, have you? Have you even gone on one date? I'm not lying to him. I'm just not telling him stuff that's going to freak him out for no reason. It's not the same."
"It is," argued Jill.
I could tell how much it killed her to talk back to Lissa, but I admired her boldness.
He has a right to know.
Lissa sighed irritably and stood up.
Forget it. I thought we could have an adult conversation, but apparently not.
The withering look she gave Jill made the girl flinch.
Still, back at the academy, guilt plagued Lissa.
Christian greeted her return happily, showering her with kisses and hugs. She firmly believed Jill had overreacted, yet each time Lissa looked at Christian, she kept thinking about that kiss with Aaron. Was it as wrong as Jill had implied? It had been casual and under the influence of alcohol. Lissa knew telling Christian would upset him, though, and she hated to bring that on. Avery, listening as Lissa deliberated, agreed that there was no need to worry about it. Yet, as I looked at her through Lissa's eyes, my impression was that Avery was more worried about what Lissa's emotional reaction would be if she and Christian had a blowout. The moral seemed beside the point. Avery wanted to protect Lissa. It seemed like it was all going to blow over. Until later in the day, when Lissa met up with Christian to walk to dinner. His face was a storm cloud as he approached Lissa in her dorm's lobby, his pale blue eyes looking like they could shoot lightning bolts.
"When were you going to tell me?"
he demanded. His voice was loud and several passing people turned in surprise. Lissa hurried him to a corner, pitching her voice low.
"What are you talking about?"
"You know what I'm talking about. You using your weekend getaway as a chance to hook up with other guys."
She stared at him for several heavy seconds. Then the truth hit.
"Jill told you?"
"Yes. I had to drag it out of her. She showed up to practice with me and was on the verge of tears."
Uncharacteristic anger suddenly burned through Lissa.
"She had no right."
"You had no right. Do you honestly think you could do something like that without ever letting me know?"
"Christian, it was a stupid drunk kiss, for God's sake. A joke because he saved me from falling off a table. It meant nothing."
Christian's face grew pensive, and Lissa thought for sure he was about to agree with her.
"It would have been nothing," he said at last, "if you'd told me yourself. I shouldn't have had to hear it from someone else."
"Jill..."
"Isn't the problem. You are."
Shock stunned Lissa for a moment.
"What are you saying?"
"I..."
Christian suddenly looked weary. He rubbed his eyes.
"I don't know. It's just... things have been rough lately. I'm just not sure if I can deal with all this. You were picking fights with me before you left. And now this?"
"Why won't you listen? It was nothing. Even Avery agreed."
"Oh,"
said Christian sarcastically.
"If Avery agreed, then it must be okay."
Lissa's temper raised its ugly head.
"What's that supposed to mean? I thought you liked her."
"I do, but I don't like how you're confiding in her more than me lately."
"You didn't have a problem with me confiding in Rose."
"Avery's not Rose."
"Christian..."
He shook his head.
"Look, I don't really want to go to dinner anymore. I just need to think."
"When am I going to see you again?"
she asked frantically. Her anger had been supplanted by fear.
"I don't know. Later."
He left without another word. Lissa stared after him, aghast as he walked out of the lobby. She wanted to go throw herself at him, beg him to come back and forgive her. There were too many people around, however, and she refused to make a scene or intrude on his space. Instead, she took off to the only resource she had left, Avery.
"Didn't expect to see you again," Avery said, opening the door to her room.
"What are you? Jesus Christ, what's the matter?"
She ushered Lissa in and demanded the story. With a lot of tears and near hysteric rambling, Lissa related what had happened with Christian.
"And I don't know what he meant. Does he want to break up? Will he come talk to me later? Should I go to him?"
Lissa buried her face in her hands.
"Oh, God, you don't think there's anything going on with him and Jill, do you?"
"A jailbait? No,"
exclaimed Avery.
"Of course not. Look, you need to calm down. You're freaking me out. This is going to be okay."
Anxiety lined Avery's face, and she went to get Lissa a glass of water. Then, reconsidering, she poured a glass of wine instead. Sitting alone, Lissa felt her wild emotions torment her. She hated what she'd done. She felt like there was something wrong with her. First she'd alienated me, and now Christian. Why couldn't she keep her friends? What did it take? Was she really going crazy?
She felt out of control and desperate. And she... Bam! Suddenly, and without warning, I was shoved out of Lissa's head. Her thoughts disappeared completely. I'd neither left of my own choice, nor had I been snapped back because of something in my own body. I stood in the room alone, having come to a standstill while pacing and thinking. Never, never had anything like that happened to me. This had been like, well, like a physical force. Like a glass wall or force field slamming down in front of me and pushing me back. It had been an outside power. It hadn't come from me. But what was it? Had it been Lissa? To my knowledge, she'd never been able to feel me in her head. Had that changed? Had she kicked me out? Had her spinning feelings grown so strong that there was no room for me? I didn't know, and I didn't like any of it. When it had happened, aside from the sensation of being pushed, I'd experienced another strange feeling. It was like a fluttering, as if someone had reached in and tickled my mind. I'd had brief warm and cold flashes, and then it had all stopped once I was out of her head. It felt invasive, and it had also felt familiar. Chapter 23. Unfortunately, I couldn't remember where I'd felt it before. Considering everything else that had been happening to me, the fact that I'd even recalled it at all was remarkable. My memories were a little scattered, but I did my best to sift through them, wondering where I had experienced that tickling in my brain. I received no answers, and pondering it all soon became as frustrating as coming up with an escape plan. And as more time passed, I realized I really did need an escape plan. The endorphin withdrawal was killing me, but I was thinking more and more clearly as the effects left my system. I was astonished at how out of it I'd let myself become. As soon as I'd allowed Dimitri to bite me, I'd fallen apart. I'd lost my higher reasoning. I'd lost my strength and skills. I'd become soft and silly and stupid. Well, not entirely. If I'd completely lost it, I'd be a Strigoi now. There was some comfort, at least, in knowing that even while high on bites, some part of me had still fought through and refused to succumb. Knowing I wasn't as entirely weak as I'd believed helped me keep going. It made it easier to ignore the yearning in my body, to distract myself with bad TV and eating all the food in the little refrigerator. I even stayed awake for a long time in the hopes of exhausting myself. It worked, and I crashed as soon as I hit the pillow, drifting into a dreamless sleep with no withdrawal effects. I was awakened later when a body slid into bed beside me. I opened my eyes and stared right into Dimitri's red ones. For the first time in days, I looked at him with fear, not love. I kept that off my face, though, and smiled at him. I reached out and touched his face. "You're back. I missed you." He caught my hand and kissed my palm.
"I had things to do."
The shadows shifted on his face, and I caught the tiniest glimpse of dried blood near his mouth. Grimacing, I rubbed it off with my finger. "So I see."
"It's the natural order, Rose. How are you feeling?"
"Better. Except..."
"What?"
I looked away, conflicted again. The look in his eyes just then was more than simple curiosity. There was concern there, only a little, but it was there. Concern for me. And yet only a moment ago, I'd wiped blood from his face. Blood from some poor person whose life had been snuffed out within the last few hours, most likely. "I was in Lissa's head," I said at last. There was no harm in telling him this. Like Nathan, he knew she was at the academy. "And I got pushed out."
"Pushed out?"
"Yeah. I was seeing through her eyes like I usually do. And then some force, I don't know, an invisible hand, shoved me out. I've never felt anything like it."
"Maybe it's a new spirit ability."
"Maybe. Except I've been watching her regularly. And I've never seen her practice or even consider anything like that." He shrugged slightly and put an arm around me.
"Being awakened gives you better senses and accessibility to the world, but it doesn't make you omniscient. I don't know why that happened to you."
clearly not omniscient, or else Nathan wouldn't want information about her so badly. Why is that? Why are the Strigoi fixated on killing the royal lines? We know you've been doing it, but why? What does it matter? Isn't a victim a victim? Especially when plenty of Strigoi used to be royal Moroi.
That requires a complicated answer. A large part of hunting Moroi royalty is fear. In your old world, royalty are held above all others. They get the best guardians, the best protection.
Yes, that was certainly true. Lyssa had discovered that much at court.
If we can still get to them through that, then what does it say? It means no one is safe. It creates fear, and fear makes people do foolish things. It makes them easier prey.
That's horrible.
Prey or...
Yeah, I know. Prey or predator. His eyes narrowed slightly, apparently not liking the interruption. He let it go.
There's also a benefit to unraveling Moroi leadership. That creates instability, too.
Or maybe they'd be better off with a change of leadership, I said. He gave me another odd look, and I was a bit startled myself. There I was, thinking like Viktor Dashkov again. I realized I should just be quiet. I wasn't behaving like my usual scattered and high self. What's the rest?
The rest?
A smile curved up his lips.
The rest is prestige. We do it for the glory of it. For the reputation it gives us, and the satisfaction of knowing we're responsible for destroying that which others haven't been able to destroy for centuries.
Simple Strigoi nature. Malice, hunting, and death. There didn't need to be any other reasons. Dimitri's gaze moved past me to my bedside table. It was where I took off all my jewelry at night and laid it out. All his gifts were there, glittering like some pirate's treasure. Reaching over me, he lifted up the Nazar on its chain.
You still have this?
Yep. Not as pretty as your stuff, though. Seeing the blue eye reminded me of my mother. I hadn't thought about her in a very long time. Back in Baia, I'd grown to see Olena as a secondary mother. But now... now I kind of wished for my own. Janine Hathaway might not cook and clean, but she was smart and competent. And in some ways, I realized with a start, we thought alike. My traits had come from her, and I knew with certainty that in this situation, she wouldn't have stopped planning escape.
"This I haven't seen before," Dimitri said.
He'd set the Nazar back down and picked up the plain silver ring Mark had given me. I hadn't worn it since I was last in the Belikov house, and had set it on the table next to the Nazar. I got it while I was... I stopped, realizing I had never brought up my travels before Novosibirsk.
While you were what?
While I was in your hometown, in Baia. Dimitri was playing with the ring, moving it from fingertip to fingertip, but he paused and glanced over at me when I said the name.
You were there?
Strangely, we hadn't talked much about that. I'd mentioned Novosibirsk a few times, but that was it. I thought that's where you'd be, I explained. I didn't know that Strigoi did their hunting in cities here. I stayed with your family. His eyes returned to the ring. He continued playing with it, twirling it and rolling it around.
And
they were nice. I liked them. I hung out with Victoria a lot.
Why wasn't she at school?
It was Easter.
Ah, right. How was she?
Fine, I said quickly. I couldn't bring myself to tell him about the last night with her and Roland. Caroline is good, too. She reminds me of you. She really laid into some Dompierre guys who were causing trouble. He smiled again. And it was... nice. I mean, the fangs still made it creepy, but it didn't have that sinister edge I'd come to expect. There was fondness in his face. True affection that startled me.
I can see Carolina doing that. Did she have her baby yet?
Yeah. I was still a little thrown off by that smile. It was a girl. Zoya.
Zoya, he repeated, still not looking at me. Not a bad name. How was Sonia?
Okay.
I didn't see too much of her. She's a little touchy. Victoria says it's because of the pregnancy.
Sonia's pregnant too?
Oh, yeah. 6 months, I think. His smile dimmed a little bit, and he almost seemed concerned.
I suppose it had to happen sooner or later. Her decisions aren't always as wise as Carolina's. Carolina's children were by choice. I'm guessing Sonia's was a surprise.
Yeah, I kind of got that feeling, too. He ticked off the rest of his family members.
My mother and grandmother?
Fine. Both of them. This conversation was becoming increasingly strange. Not only was it the first normal one we'd had since I'd arrived, it was also the first time he'd really seemed interested in anything that wasn't Strigoi-related or that didn't involve kissing and biting, aside from some reminiscing about our early fights together and the teasing reminders of sex in the cabin. Your grandmother scared me a little. He laughed, and I flinched. It was so, so close to his old laugh. Closer than I'd ever imagined it could be.
Yes, she does that to people.
And she pretended not to speak English. That was a pretty small detail in the grand scheme of things, but it still kind of pissed me off.
Yes, she does that too.
He continued smiling, voice fond.
Do they all still live together? In that same house?
Yep. I saw the books he told me about. The pretty ones, but I couldn't read them.
That's where I first got into American Westerns.
Man, I loved making fun of you over those. He chuckled.
Yes. Between that, your stereotypes about Eastern European music, and the whole comrade thing, you had plenty of material.
I laughed, too. Comrade and the music were kind of out of line. I'd almost forgotten about my old nickname for him. It didn't fit anymore. But you brought the cowboy thing on yourself, between the leather duster and... I stopped. I'd started to mention his duty to help those in need, but that was hardly the case anymore. He didn't notice my lapse.
And then you left them and came to Novosibirsk?
Yeah, I came with those Dompiers I was hunting with. Those other unpromised ones? I almost didn't, though. Your family wanted me to stay. I thought about doing it. Dmitri held the ring up to the light, face shadowed with thought. He sighed.
You probably should have.
They're good people.
They are, he said softly. You might have been happy there.
Reaching over, he set the ring back on the table and then turned to me, bringing our mouths together. It was the softest, sweetest kiss he'd given me as a Strigoi, and my already considerable shock increased. The gentleness was fleeting, though, and a few seconds later, our kissing returned to what it usually was, forceful and hungry. I had a feeling he was hungry for more than just kissing, too, despite having fed recently. Pushing aside my confusion over how, well, normal and kind he'd seemed while talking about his family, I tried to figure out how I was going to dodge more biting without raising suspicion. My body was still weak and wanting it, but in my head, I felt more like myself than I had in ages. Dmitri pulled up from the kiss, and I blurted out the first thing that came to mind before he could do anything else. What's it like?
What's what like?
Kissing. He frowned. Score one for me. I'd momentarily baffled an undead creature of the night. Sydney would be proud.
What do you mean?
You said being awakened enhances all the senses. Is kissing different then?
Ah.
Understanding flashed over his features.
It is, kind of. My sense of smell is stronger than it used to be, so your scent comes through much more intensely. Your sweat, the shampoo in your hair. It's beyond what you can imagine. Intoxicating. And of course, sharper taste and touch make this better.
He leaned down and kissed me again, and something about his description made my insides queasy. In a good way. That wasn't supposed to happen. My hope was to distract him, not myself. When we were outside the other night, the flowers were really strong. If they're strong to me, are they overwhelming to you? I mean, do the scents get to be too much? And so it began. I bombarded him with as many questions as I could,
asking him about all aspects of Strigoi life. I wanted to know what it was like, how he felt. I asked everything with curiosity and enthusiasm, biting my lip and turning thoughtful at all the right places. I could see his interest grow as I spoke, though his attitude was brisk and efficient, in no way resembling our earlier affectionate conversation. He was hoping that I was finally on the verge of agreeing to turn. As the questioning continued, so also did my outward signs of fatigue. I yawned a lot, lost my train of thought a lot. Finally, I rubbed my eyes with my hands and yawned again. There's so much I didn't know. Still don't know.
I told you it was amazing.
Honestly, some of it was. Most of it was creepy as hell. But if you got over the whole undead and evil thing, there were definitely some perks to being Strigoi. I have more questions, I murmured. I closed my eyes and sighed, then opened them as though forcing myself to stay awake. But I'm so tired. I still don't feel good. You don't think I have a concussion, do I?
No. And once you're awakened, it won't matter anyway.
But not until you answer the rest of my questions. The words were muffled in a yawn, but he understood. It took him a while to respond.
Okay, not until then. But time is running out. I told you that before.
I let my lids drift closed then. But it's not the second day yet.
No,
he said quietly.
Not yet.
I lay there, steadying my breath as much as I could. Would my act work? It was highly possible he would still drink from me, even if he thought I was asleep. I was taking a gamble here. One bite, and all my work to fight the withdrawal would be wasted. I'd reset to how I'd been. As it was, I had no clue how I was going to dodge a bite next time. But then, I didn't think there'd be a next time. I'd be a Strigoi by then. Dimitri lay beside me for a few more minutes, and then I felt him move. Inside, I braced myself. Damn. Here it came. The bite. I'd been certain that our kissing was part of the allure of him drinking from me, and that if I just fell asleep, the allure would be gone. Apparently not. All my pretending was for nothing. It was all over. But it wasn't. He got up and left. When I heard the door close, I almost thought it was a scam. I thought for sure he was trying to fake me out and still actually stood in the room. Yet when I felt the Strigoi nausea fade, I realized the truth. He really had left me, thinking I needed to sleep. My act had been convincing. I immediately sat up, turning a few different things over in my mind. In that last bit of his visit, he'd seemed, well, he'd reminded me more than ever of the old Dimitri. Sure, he'd still been Strigoi through and through, but there'd been something else. A bit of warmth to his laugh. Sincere interest and affection upon hearing about his family. Had that been it? Had hearing news of his family triggered some piece of his soul buried within the monster? I confess, I felt a little jealous at the thought that they might have wrought the change in him that I couldn't. But he'd still had that same warmth in talking about us. Just a little. No. No, I had to stop this. There was no change, no reversal of his state. It was wishful thinking, and the more I regained my old self, the more I realized the truth of the situation. Dimitri's actions had made me recall something. I'd completely forgotten about Oksana's ring. I picked it up from the table and slipped it on my finger. I felt no noticeable change, but if the healing magic was still in it, it might help me. It could expedite my body and mind healing from the withdrawal. If any of Lyssa's darkness was bleeding into me, the ring could help dampen that too. I sighed. No matter how often I told myself I was free of her, I never would be. She was my best friend. We were connected in a way that few could understand. The denial I'd been living under lifted. I regretted my actions with Adrian now. He'd come to me for help, and I'd thrown his kindness back in his face. Now I was bereft of communication with the outside world. And thinking of Lyssa reminded me again of what had happened earlier when I'd been in her mind. What had pushed me out? I hesitated, pondering my course of action. Lissa was far away and possibly in trouble. Dimitri and the other Strigoi were here. But I couldn't walk away quite yet. I had to take one more look at her. Just a quick one. I found her in an unexpected place. She was with Deirdre, a counselor on campus. Lissa had been seeing a counselor ever since Spirit had begun manifesting, but it had been someone else. Expanding my senses to Lissa's thoughts, I read the story. Her counselor had left shortly after the school's attack. Lissa had been reassigned to Deirdre, who had once counseled me when everyone thought I was going crazy over Mason's death. Deirdre was a very polished-looking Maroi, always meticulously dressed with her blonde hair styled to perfection. She didn't look much older than us, and with me, her counseling method had resembled a police interrogation. With Lissa, she was more gentle. It figured. "Lissa, we're a little worried about you. Normally you would have been suspended. I actually stopped that from happening. I keep feeling like there's something going on that you aren't telling me. Some other issue." "Lissa suspended?" I again reached in to read the situation and found it. Last night, Lissa and others had been busted for breaking into the library of all places and having an impromptu party complete with alcohol and destruction to some of the property. Good God! My best friend needed to join AA. Lissa's arms were crossed, her demeanor almost combative. "There's no issue. We were just trying to have fun. I'm sorry for the damage. If you want to suspend me, go ahead." Deirdre shook her head. "That's not my decision. My concern is the why here. I know you used to suffer from depression and other problems because of your, magic. But this feels more like some kind of rebellion."
"Rebellion? Oh, it was more than that. Since their fight, Lissa had been unable to find Christian, and it was killing her. She couldn't handle downtime now. All she thought about was him. Or me. Partying and risk-taking were the only things that could distract her from us."
"Students do this stuff all the time," argued Lissa. "Why is it a big deal for me?"
"Well, because you put yourself in danger. After the library, you were on the verge of breaking into the pool. Swimming while intoxicated is definite cause for alarm."
"Nobody drowned, even if someone had started to. I'm sure that between all of us, we could have pulled them out."
"It's just alarming, considering some of the self-destructive behaviors you once exhibited, like the cutting."
So it went for the next hour, and Lissa did as good a job as I used to in dodging Deirdre's questions. When the session ended, Deirdre said she wasn't going to recommend disciplinary action. She wanted Lissa back for more counseling. Lissa would have actually preferred detention or cleaning boards.
As she stalked furiously across campus, she spotted Christian going in the opposite direction. Hope lit the blackness of her mind like sunshine.
"Christian!"
she yelled, running up to him. He stopped, giving her a wary look.
"What do you want?"
"What do you mean, what do I want?"
She wanted to throw herself in his arms and have him tell her everything would be okay. She was upset and overwhelmed and filled with darkness. But there was a piece of vulnerability there that desperately needed him.
"I haven't been able to find you."
"I've just been..." His face darkened. "I don't know. Thinking. Besides, from what I hear, you haven't been too bored."
No surprise, everyone knew about last night's fiasco. That kind of thing spread like wildfire thanks to the Academy's gossip mill.
"It was nothing," she said.
The way he regarded her made her heart ache.
"That's the thing," he said. "Everything's nothing lately. All your partying, making out with other guys, lying."
"I haven't been lying," she exclaimed. "And when are you going to get over Aaron?"
"You aren't telling me the truth. It's the same thing."
It was an echo of Jill's sentiment. Lissa barely knew her and was really starting to hate her.
"I just can't handle this. I can't be a part of you going back to your days of being a royal girl doing crazy stunts with your other royal friends."
Here's the thing. If Lissa had elaborated on her feelings more, on just how much her guilt and depression were eating her up and making her spin out of control, well, I think Christian would have been there for her in an instant. despite his cynical exterior. He had a good heart, and Lissa owned most of it. Or used to. Now, all he could see was her being silly and shallow and returning to a lifestyle he despised.
"I'm not," she exclaimed. "I'm just... I don't know. It just feels good to sort of let loose."
"I can't do it," he said. "I can't be with you if that's your life now."
Her eyes went wide.
"Are you breaking up with me?"
I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
Lissa was so consumed by the shock and horror of this that she didn't really see Christian the way I did. Didn't see the agony in his eyes. It destroyed him to have to do this. He was hurting too. And all he saw was the girl he loved changing and becoming someone he couldn't be with.
"Things aren't the way they used to be."
"You can't do that," she cried.
She didn't see his pain. She saw him as being cruel and unfair.
"We need to talk about this. Figure it out."
"The time for talking's past," he argued. "You should have been ready to talk sooner. Not now. Not when things suddenly aren't going your way."
Lissa didn't know whether she wanted to scream or cry. She just knew she couldn't lose Christian. Not after losing me, too. If she lost both of us, there was nothing left for her in the world.
"Please don't do this," she begged. "I can change."
"I'm sorry," he snapped. "I just don't see any evidence of that."
He turned and abruptly walked away. To her, his departure was harsh and cold. But again, I'd seen the anguish in his eyes. I think he left because he knew if he stayed, he wasn't going to be able to go through with his decision. This decision that hurt, but that he felt was right. Lissa started to go after him, but a hand suddenly pulled her back. She turned and saw Avery and Adrian standing there. From the looks on their faces, they'd overheard everything.
"Let him go," said Adrian gravely. He'd been the one to grab her.
He dropped his hand and laced his fingers through Avery's.
"Going after him now is just going to make it worse. Give him a space."
"He can't do this," said Lissa. "He can't do this to me."
"He's upset," said Avery, her concern mirroring Adrian's.
"He isn't thinking straight. Wait for him to cool off, and he'll come around."
Lissa stared off after Christian's retreating figure, her heart breaking.
"I don't know. I don't know if he will. Oh, God. I can't lose him."
My own heart broke. I wanted so badly to go to her, to comfort her and be there for her. She felt so alone, and I felt horrible for leaving her. Something had pushed her into this downward spiral, and I should have been there to help her out of it. That was what best friends did. I needed to be there. Lissa turned back and looked at Avery.
"I'm so confused. I don't know what to do."
Avery met her eyes, but when she did, the strangest thing happened. Avery wasn't looking at her. She was looking at me.
"Oh, geez, not you again."
The voice rang in my head and snapped. I was out of Lissa. There it was, the mental shove, the brush of my mind in waves of hot and cold. I stared around my room, shocked at how abrupt the transition had been. Yet I'd learned something. I knew then that Lissa hadn't been the one to shove me out before or now. Lissa had been too distracted and too distraught. The voice, that hadn't been hers either. And then I finally remembered where I'd felt that brushing touch in my head. Oksana. It was the same sensation I'd experienced when she had reached out to my mind, trying to get a feel for my moods and intentions, an action that both she and Mark admitted was invasive and wrong if you weren't bonded to someone. Carefully, I replayed what had just happened with Lissa. Once again, I saw those last few moments. Blue-gray eyes staring at me. Me, not Lissa. Lissa hadn't pushed me out of her head. Avery had.
Chapter 24. Avery was a spirit user. Oh, shit. I sat back down on the bed, my mind reeling. I'd never seen it coming. Hell, no one had.
Avery had made a good show of being an air user.
Each Maroi had a very low level of control in each element. She'd just barely done enough with air to make it seem like that was her specialization. No one had questioned her further because, honestly, Who would have ever expected another spirit user around? And since she was out of school, she had no reason to be tested anymore or forced to demonstrate her ability. No one was there to call her on it. The more I thought about it, the more the little signs were there. The charming personality, the way she could talk people into anything. How many of her interactions were spirit-controlled? And was it possible? Was it possible that Adrian's attraction had been compulsion on her part? I had no reason to feel happy about that, but, well, I did. More to the point, what did Avery want with Lissa? Avery compelling Adrian into liking her wasn't too out there. He was good-looking and came from an important family. He was the queen's great-nephew, and although family members of the current monarch could never inherit the throne immediately afterward, he'd have a good future, one that would always keep him in the highest circles of society. But Lissa? What was Avery's game there? What did she have to gain? Lissa's behavior all made sense now. The uncharacteristic partying, weird moods, jealousy, fights with Christian. Avery was pushing Lissa over the edge, causing her to make horrible choices. Avery was using some sort of compulsion to spin Lissa out of control, alienating her and putting her life in danger. Why? What did Avery want? It didn't matter. The why wasn't important. The how was. As in how I was going to get out of here and back to my best friend. I looked down at myself, at the delicate silk dress I wore. Suddenly, I hated it. It was a sign of how I'd been, weak and useless. I hastily took it off and ransacked my closet. They'd taken away my jeans and t-shirt, but I'd at least been allowed to keep my hoodie. I put on the green sweater dress, seeing as it was the sturdiest thing I had, feeling moderately more capable. I slipped the hoodie on over it. It hardly made me feel like a badass warrior, but I did feel more competent. Sufficiently dressed for action, I returned to the living room and started that pacing that tended to help me think better. Not that I had any reason to believe I was going to come up with new ideas. I'd been trying to for days and days with no luck. Nothing was going to change. "Damn it!" I yelled, feeling better with the outburst. Angry, I flounced into the desk chair, amazed that I hadn't simply thrown it against the wall in my frustration. The chair wobbled, ever so slightly. Frowning, I stood up and looked at it. Everything else in this place was state-of-the-art. Odd that I'd have a faulty chair. I knelt down and examined it more closely. There, on one of the legs, was a crack near where the leg joined with the seat. I stared. All of the furniture here was industrial strength, with no obvious joints. I should know, seeing how long I'd beat this chair against the wall when I first arrived. I hadn't even dented it. Where had this crack come from? Slamming it over and over had done nothing. But I hadn't been the only one to hit it. That very first day, I'd fought with Dimitri and come after him with the chair. He'd taken it from me and thrown it against the wall. I'd never paid attention to it again, having given up on breaking it. When I'd later tried cracking the window, I'd used an end table because it was heavier. My strength hadn't been able to damage the chair, but his had. I picked up the chair and immediately slammed it into that diamond-hard window, half hoping I might kill two birds with one stone. Nope, both remained intact. So I did it again, and again. I lost track of how many times I slammed that chair into the glass. My hands hurt, and I knew despite my recovery, I still wasn't at full strength. It was infuriating. Finally, on what felt like my gazillionth try, I looked at the chair and saw the crack had grown bigger. The progress renewed my will and strength. I hit and hit, ignoring the pain as the wood bit into my hands. At long last, I heard a crack, and the leg broke off. I picked it up and stared in amazement. The break hadn't been clean. It was splintered and sharp. Sharp enough to be a stake? I wasn't sure. But I knew for a fact that wood was hard, and if I used enough force, I might be able to hit a Strigoi's heart. It wouldn't kill one, but the blow would stun. I didn't know if it'd be enough to get me out of here, but it was all I had now. And it was a hell of a lot more than I'd had 1 hour ago. I sat back on the bed, recovering from my battle with the chair and tossing the makeshift stake back and forth. Okay, I had a weapon now. But what could I do with it? Dimitri's face flashed in my mind's eye. Damn it. There was no question about it. He was the obvious target. The one I'd have to deal with first. The door suddenly clicked open, and I looked up with alarm. Quickly, I shoved the chair into a dark corner as panic raced through me. No. No. I wasn't ready. I hadn't fully convinced myself to stake him. It was Ina. She carried a tray but didn't wear her usual subservient expression. The brief look she gave me was filled with hate. I didn't know what she had to be pissed off about. It wasn't like I caused her any damage. Yet. I strode over like I was going to examine the tray. Lifting the lid, I saw a ham sandwich and French fries. It looked good. I hadn't eaten in a while. But the adrenaline running through me had shoved any appetite I might have to the background. I glanced back up at her, smiling sweetly. She shot me daggers. "Don't hesitate," Dimitri had always said. I didn't. I jumped at Ina, throwing her so hard against the floor that her head slammed back. She looked dazed, but quickly recovered and tried to fight back. I wasn't drugged up this time. Well, not much. And my years of training in natural strength finally showed themselves again. I pressed my body against her, keeping her firmly in place. Then, I produced the stake I'd had concealed and pressed those sharp points against her neck. It was like being back in the days of pinning Strigoi in alleys. She couldn't see that my weapon was a chair leg, but the sharp points got her attention as I dug them into her throat. "The code," I said. "What is the code?" Her only response was a string of obscenities in Russian. Okay, not a surprise, considering she probably didn't understand me. I flipped through the meager Russian-English dictionary in my head. I'd been in the country long enough to pick up some vocabulary. Admittedly, it was equivalent to a 2-year-old's, but even they could communicate. "Numbers," I said in Russian. "Door." At least that's what I hoped I'd said. She said more impolite things to me, her expression defiant. It really was the Strigoi interrogation all over. My stake bit harder, drawing blood, and I forcibly restrained myself. I might question whether I had the strength to pierce a Strigoi heart with this, but severing a human's vein? Cake. She faltered a little, apparently realizing the same thing. Again, I attempted my broken Russian. "Kill you, no Nathan, never..." What was the word? The church service came back to me, and I hoped I had it right. "Never eternal life." It got her attention. Nathan and eternal life. The things most important to her. She bit her lip, still angry, but her tirade had stopped. "Numbers, door," I repeated. I pushed the stake in harder, and she cried out in pain. At last she spoke, rattling off a series of digits. Russian numbers were something I had memorized pretty solidly, at least. They were essential for addresses and phone numbers. She cited 7 numbers. "Again," I said. I made her say it 3 times and hoped I had it. But there was more. I was pretty sure the outer door had a different code. "Numbers. Door. 2. I felt like a caveman. Ina stared, not quite getting it. "Door. 2. Understanding glinted in her eyes, and she looked mad. I think she'd hoped I wouldn't realize the other door had its own code. More cutting with the stake made her scream 7 more numbers. Again, I made her repeat them, realizing I had no way to know if she was telling me the truth. At least until I tried the numbers. For that reason, I decided to keep her around. I felt guilty about what I did next, but these were desperate times. In guardian training, I'd been taught both to kill and to incapacitate. I did the latter this time, slamming her head back against the floor and rendering her unconscious. Her expression went slack, her eyelids drooping. Damn, I was reduced to hurting teenage humans. Standing up, I moved to the door and punched in the first set of numbers, hoping I had them right. To my complete and utter astonishment, I did. The electronic lock clicked, but before I could open the door, I just barely made out another click. Someone had unlocked the outer door. "Shit," I muttered. I pulled away from the door immediately, picked up Ina's unconscious body, and hurried to the bathroom. I set her in the tub as gently as possible and had just shut the bathroom door when I heard the main door open. I felt the telltale nausea that signaled a Strigoi was nearby. I knew one of the Strigoi could smell a human, and I hoped shutting her away would be enough to mute Ina's scent. I emerged from the hall and found Dimitri in the living room. I grinned at him and ran into his arms.
"You're back," I said happily.
He held me briefly and then stepped back.
"Yes."
He seemed slightly pleased at the greeting, but soon his face was all business.
"Have you made your decision?"
No hello. No how are you feeling? My heart sank. This wasn't Dimitri.
"I have more questions."
I went over to the bed and lay down in a casual way, just like we always did. He followed a few moments later and sat on the edge, looking down at me.
"How long will it take?" I asked.
"When you awaken me. Is it instantaneous?" Once more, I launched into an interrogation session. Honestly, I was running out of questions, and at this point, I didn't really want to know the intricacies of becoming Strigoi. I was becoming more and more agitated with each passing moment. I had to act. I had to make use of my fleeting opportunity here. And yet, before I could act, I had to reassure myself that this really wasn't Dimitri. It was stupid. I should know by now. I could see the physical changes. I'd seen his coldness, the brutality. I'd seen him come fresh from a kill. This wasn't the man I'd loved. And yet, for that one fleeting moment earlier. With a sigh, Dimitri stretched out beside me.
"Rose,"
he interrupted.
"If I didn't know better, I'd say you were stalling for time."
Yeah, even as a Strigoi, Dimitri knew how I thought and schemed. I realized if I was going to be convincing, I had to stop playing dumb and remember to be Rose Hathaway. I put on a look of outrage. "Of course I am! This is a big deal! I came here to kill you, and now you're asking me to join you? You think this is easy for me to do?"
"Do you think it's been easy for me to wait this long? The only ones who get choices are Maroi, who willingly kill, like the Ozeras. No one else gets a choice. I didn't get a choice."
"And don't you regret that?"
"No, not now. Now that I'm who I was meant to be."
He frowned.
"The only thing hurt is my pride. That Nathan forced me, and that he acts as though I'm indebted to him. Which is why I'm being kind enough to give you the choice now. For the sake of your pride."
"Kind, huh?" I looked at him and felt my heart breaking all over again. It was like hearing the news of his death once more. I suddenly grew afraid I might cry. No. No tears. Dimitri always talked about prey and predators. I had to be the predator.
"You're sweating," he said suddenly. "Why?"
Damn. Of course I was sweating. I was contemplating staking the man I loved. Or thought I'd loved. And along with sweat, I was sure I was giving off pheromones of my agitation. Strigoi could smell all of those things, too.
"Because I'm scared," I whispered. I propped myself up and stroked the edge of his face, trying to memorize all of his features. The eyes, the hair, the shape of his cheekbones. In my imagination, I overlaid the things I remembered. Dark eyes, tanned skin, sweet smile. I think I'm ready, but it's... I don't know. It's such a big thing."
"It'll be the best decision of your life, Rosa."
My breathing was growing rapid, and I prayed he'd think it was because of my fear of being turned.
"Tell me again. One more time. Why do you want to awaken me so badly?"
A slightly weary look crossed his face.
"Because I want you. I've always wanted you."
And that's when I knew. I finally realized the problem. He'd given that same answer over and over, and each time, something about it had bothered me. I'd never been able to pinpoint it, though. Now I could. He wanted me. Wanted me in the way people wanted possessions or collectibles. The Dimitri I'd known. The one I'd fallen for and slept with. That Dimitri would have said he wanted us to be together because he loved me. There was no love here. I smiled at him. Leaning down,
I kissed him gently. He probably thought I was doing it for the reasons I always did, out of attraction and desire. In truth, it was a goodbye kiss. His mouth answered mine, his lips warm and eager. I held out the kiss a little longer, both to fight back the tears leaking out of my eyes and to lull him into an unsuspecting state. My hand closed around the chair leg, which I'd hidden in my hoodie pocket. I would never forget Dimitri, not for the rest of my life. And this time, I wouldn't forget his lessons. With a speed he wasn't ready for, I struck out and plunged the stake through his chest. My strength was there, sliding the stake past the ribs and straight into his heart. And as I did it, it was like piercing my own heart at the same time. Chapter 25. His eyes widened in shock, lips parting. Even though I knew this wasn't a silver stake, it might as well have been. To run it through his heart, I'd had to act as decisively as I would have if delivering a killing blow. I'd had to finally accept my Dimitri's death. This one was a Strigoi. There was no future with him. I would not join him. That still didn't make some part of me want to stop and lie down beside him, though, or at the very least see what happened next. After that initial surprise, his features and breathing had gone still, giving the illusion of death. That's all it was, however, an illusion. I'd seen it before. I probably had 5 minutes at most before he healed up and shook this off. I had no time to mourn for what was and what might have been. I had to act now. No hesitation. I ran my hands over him, searching his clothes for anything that might be of use. I found a set of keys and some cash. I pocketed the keys and started to leave the cash, but realized I might actually need it on the off chance I escaped this place. My own money had been taken when I arrived. I also swept up some of the jewelry on the table. Finding buyers for that kind of thing in big Russian cities wasn't too difficult. If I made it to said city. I stood up off the bed and gave Dimitri one last pained look. A few of the tears I'd hidden from him earlier now ran down my face. That was all I could allow myself. If I had a later, I'd mourn then. Before leaving, my gaze lingered on the stake. I wanted to take it with me. It was my only weapon. Pulling it out would mean he'd wake up in about a minute. I needed the extra time. With a sigh, I turned my back on him, hoping I'd find a weapon elsewhere. I sprinted over to the suite's door and punched in the code again. It unlocked, and I stepped into the corridor. Before going to the next door, I examined the one I'd just stepped through. To get into the suite, there was another keypad. Entry also required a code. Backing up a little, I struck and kicked the keypad as hard as I could. I did it twice more until the tiny red light on it went out. I didn't know if that would affect the lock on the inside of the suite, but in the movies, damaging electronic locks always seemed to work. Turning my attention to the next lock, I tried to remember the numbers Ina had told me. They weren't etched as strongly in my head as the first. I punched in 7 numbers. The little light stayed red. Damn! It was possible she'd lied about this set, but somehow, I suspected my memory was the culprit here. I tried again, knowing the clock was ticking on how long I had until Dimitri came after me. The red light flashed again. What were those numbers? I tried to visualize them in my head and finally decided I wasn't entirely sure about the last two. I reversed their order the next time I put in the code. The light flashed green and the door unlocked. Of course, there was a security system of a different sort outside. A Strigoi. And not just any Strigoi. It was Marlin. The one I'd tortured in the alley. The one who hated me because I'd disgraced him in front of Galina. He was clearly on guard duty and looked as though he'd expected a boring night. Me coming out the door was a shock. That gave me, about a millisecond of surprise. My first thought was to just run at him with as much brute strength as I could. I knew he would do the same to me. In fact, that was exactly what he'd do. I stayed where I was, standing so that I could keep the door propped open. He came at me to stop my escape, and I stepped aside, pulling the door open wider. Now, I was neither skilled enough, nor was he inept enough to simply get lured in. He stopped in the doorway, trying to get hold of me. This gave me the difficult task of trying to both fend him off and drag him into the corridor behind the door. I stepped back into the doorway, hoping he'd follow. All the while, I had to keep the door open. It was all complicated, and I would have no time to punch in the code again. We fought in the confined space. The biggest thing I had going for me was that Marlin appeared to be a young Strigoi, which made sense. Galena would want to keep around henchmen she could control. Of course, Strigoi's strength and speed compensated for a lack of experience. The fact that he had been a Moroi once also meant he probably had very little training. That also was a bonus for me. Dimitri was a badass Strigoi because he'd trained as a fighter before being turned. This guy had not. So, Marlin got a couple of punches in on me, one coming dangerously close to my eye. The other caught me in the stomach, knocking the air out of me for half a second. But most of the time, I was able to dodge him pretty well. This seemed to infuriate him. Getting beat up by a teenage girl didn't really score you cool points when you were a Strigoi. At one point, I even faked him out in one direction and came at him with a surprise kick, easier to do than I'd expected in that damn dress, that knocked him back a few steps. I just barely managed to keep my hand in the door when I did it, but that was all I needed. His stumble gave me a few seconds to slip out the door and into the main hall. Unfortunately, when I tried to close it, he was already trying to come through. With my hands, I tried to pull the door shut while kicking him back inside. We struggled this way for a while, and thanks to whatever luck I had left, I got the door closed enough so that only his arm was sticking through. Bracing myself, I pulled the door toward me in one huge, forceful movement. It slammed into Marlin's wrist. I half expected to see his hand detach and pop into the hall, but he jerked it back. Even Strigoi had certain instincts to avoid pain. Gasping, my physical strength still wasn't all it could be, I backed up. If he knew the code, this had been for nothing. A moment later, the door's handle shook, but didn't open. I heard a scream of rage, and then his fists beat on the door. Score one for me. No, score one for luck. If he'd known the code, I would have been... thud. Marlin was still beating on the door, and I saw the tiniest dent appear on the metallic surface. Oh, crap, I said. I didn't stick around to see how many hits it'd take him to break it down. I also realized that even if I disabled the first lock, Dimitri would just be able to break that one down too. Dimitri. No, I absolutely couldn't think of him now. As I ran down the hall, heading toward the stairs Dimitri and I traveled before, an unexpected memory suddenly popped into my head. When Dimitri had last threatened Nathan, he mentioned getting my stake out of a vault. What vault was that exactly? Was it here on the premises? If so, I certainly didn't have time to look. When weighing the option to search a four-story house full of vampires or run off into the countryside before they found you, well, the choice was clear. And it was in the midst of that thought process that I ran into a human at the top of the stairs. He was older than Ina and carrying a stack of linens that he dropped when we collided. With almost no pause, I grabbed hold of him and swung him against the wall. I had no weapon to threaten him with, and wondered how I'd assert my will now. Yet as soon as I had him pinned, he threw up his hands in a defensive gesture and began whimpering in Russian. There'd be no attacks on me here. Of course, now I had the problem of communicating what I needed. Marlin was still beating on the door, and Dimitri would be up in a couple of minutes. I glared at the human, hoping I looked terrifying. From his expression, I did. I attempted the caveman talk I had with Ina. Only this time, the message was a little harder. Stick, I said in Russian. I had no clue what the word for stick was. I pointed at the silver ring I wore and made a slashing motion. Stick, where? He glared at me in utter confusion and then asked in perfect English.
Why are you talking like that?
Oh, for God's sake, I exclaimed. Where is the vault?
Vault?
A place they keep weapons, he continued staring. I'm looking for a silver stake.
Oh, he said. That.
Uneasily, he cast his eyes in the direction of the pounding. I pushed him harder against the wall. My heart felt like it would burst out of my chest, but I tried to hide it. I wanted this guy to think I was invincible.
Ignore him. Take me to the vault, now.
With a frightened yelp, he nodded eagerly and beckoned me down the stairs.
We descended to the second floor and made a sharp turn. The halls here were as twisty as the hedge maze Dimitri had shown me, all decorated in that gold and chandelier style, and I wondered if I'd even be able to get out of the house. Attempting this detour was a risk, but I wasn't sure if I could get outside without being followed. If I was, there'd be a confrontation. I'd need to defend myself. The human led me down another hall, and yet another. Finally, we reached a door that looked like any other. He stopped and peered at me expectantly. "Open it," I said. He shook his head.
"I don't have the key."
"Well, I certainly don't."
"Wait."
I reached into my pocket and pulled out the keys I'd lifted from Dimitri. There were 5 keys on the ring. I tried them one at a time, and on the 3rd one, I got a hit. The door opened. Meanwhile, my guide was casting hasty glances behind him and looked ready to bolt. "Don't even think about it," I warned. He blanched and stayed put. The room before us wasn't very big, and while its plush white carpet and silver-framed paintings made it look elegant, the room was, well, basically, it looked like a junkyard. Boxes and weird objects, a lot of personal items like watches and rings in particular, lay around in no order. "What is this?"
"Magic," he said, still obviously scared out of his mind. "Magic items kept here to fade or be destroyed."
"Magic? Ah." These were items charmed by Maroi magic. Charms always had some kind of effect on Strigoi, usually unpleasant, with stakes being the worst, since they used all 4 physical elements. It made sense that Strigoi would want to isolate harmful objects and get rid of...
"My stake!"
I ran forward and picked it up, nearly dropping it because my hands were so sweaty. The stake was lying on top of a box, with a length of cloth and some weird stones. Studying it, I realized it wasn't actually my stake. Not that it made a difference for killing Strigoi. This stake was almost identical, save for a small geometric pattern running around its base. It was something guardians did from time to time if they felt particularly attached to their stake. Have a design or initials etched into it. Holding this stake, I felt a momentary pang of sadness. This had belonged to someone who'd wielded it proudly once, someone who was now most likely dead. God only knew how many other dozens of stakes were in here, seized from other unfortunate prisoners, but I had no time to search or mourn those who had died. "Okay, now I want you to take me to..." I hesitated. Even with a stake, it'd be a lot better for me if I didn't face any more Strigoi. I had to assume there'd still be a guard at the front door. "Some room on this floor with a window that actually opens, and is far from the stairs." The guy thought for a moment, and then gave a quick nod. "This way." I followed him through another maze of twisting corridors. "What's your name?"
"Oleg."
"You know," I said, "I'm getting out of here. If you want, I could take you with me." Having someone else, a human particularly, would definitely slow me down, yet my conscience wouldn't let me leave anyone behind in this place. He gave me an incredulous glance.
"Why would I want to do that?"
Sydney had definitely been right about humans making great sacrifices for immortality. Oleg and Ina were living proof. We rounded a corner and came face to face with an elaborate set of French doors. Through the etched glass, I could see book-lined shelves stretching all the way up the walls. A library, a huge one that extended on and on out of my sight. Better yet, I saw a large bay window opposite me, framed in heavy satin curtains the color of blood. "Perfect," I said, pushing open the doors. That was when the nausea hit me. We weren't alone in the room. Galena sprang up from a chair near the fireplace on the far side of the room. A book dropped from her lap. I had no time to dwell on the oddity of a Strigoi having a fireside read, because she was coming right toward me. I almost might have thought Oleg had set me up, but he was cowering in a corner, his face mirroring the shock I felt. Despite the library's enormous size, she reached me in seconds. I dodged her initial attack, or tried to, at least. She was fast. Aside from Dimitri, the other Strigoi in this house were clearly the B-team, and I had forgotten just how badass a truly skilled Strigoi was. She caught me by my arm and swung me toward her, mouth open and fangs going straight for my neck. I had the stake in my hand and tried awkwardly to at least scratch her with it,
but she was holding me too tightly. At last, I managed to duck a little and move my throat out of her range, but all this did was give her the opportunity to grab hold of my hair. She jerked me upright, and I screamed in pain. How she managed to hold onto my hair without ripping it right out was remarkable. Still gripping it, she shoved me into a wall. When I'd first fought with Dimitri upon my arrival, he'd been rough, but hadn't wanted to kill me. Galena did. She'd taken it on faith from Dimitri that I'd be an asset, but it was obvious now that I was a real pain in the ass. Her amnesty had ended, and she was intent on killing me. I at least had the comfort of knowing she probably wouldn't turn me into a Strigoi. I'd be lunch. A shout suddenly drew my attention to the door. Dimitri stood there, face blazing with anger. Whatever illusions I'd harbored about him being his former self disappeared. That fury radiated around him, his eyes narrowed and fangs showing. The pale skin and red eyes contrasted sharply against each other. He was like a demon sent straight from hell to destroy me. He strode toward us, and the immediate thought in my head was, well, at least this will end things that much faster. Except, it wasn't me he attacked. It was Galena. I'm not sure which of us was more surprised, but in that moment, I was totally forgotten. The Strigoi raced toward each other, and I froze, stunned at the terrible beauty of their fight. There was almost a gracefulness to the way they moved, the way they struck out and skillfully dodged each other. I stared a bit longer, and then mentally slapped myself into action. This was my chance to get out of here. I couldn't get distracted. I turned to the bay window, searching frantically for a means to open it. There was none. Son of a bitch! Maybe Oleg had set me up after all. Or maybe there was just some mechanism that wasn't apparent to me. Regardless, I felt pretty confident there was one way to get it open. I ran to the side of the room where Galena had sat and grabbed an ornate wooden chair. It was obvious this window wasn't made of the hardcore glass that had been in my room. This stuff was similar to the library's French doors, delicate and engraved with fanciful designs, even though darkly tinted. It couldn't require that much force to break. After all that fruitless beating in my room, I took a kind of smug satisfaction in slamming the chair into it with as much force as possible. The impact made a huge hole in one side of the window, glass spraying everywhere. A few shards hit my face, but it was nothing to concern me now. Behind me, the sounds of battle raged on. There were grunts and muffled cries.